modifications to that number, but that's the bottom line. I will go through the two modifications that you should be aware of. We generated $1.3 million in additional reversions from state agencies between October and January. That's a positive to the bottom line. That's cash available and on hand for appropriations or meeting the needs of prior appropriations. We also included, and we will get to this in a while, we also included the feed bill as adopted by Management Council. That bill, along with the budget bill, follows a different rule for the profile. All other bills require approval of Committee of the Whole in the first house of origin before they appear on the profile. The governor included a $20 million placeholder for the legislature's budget. That amount has been reduced to $18.3 million, so we benefited in the out years as a result of Management Council's action. However, that bill also included $400 and some million of effective immediate, so that makes the issue worse in fiscal year 16. So we have a balancing issue there. With respect to fiscal years 17 and 18, the Craig estimates reduced the general fund budget reserve amount by $46.4 million. Again, for those folks who were looking backwards, we had essentially a $419 million shortfall for 17 and 18 when you look at the governor's recommendations as of December 1st. I recognize that we might be a couple hundred thousand dollars off with the governor's profile, but those were issues that we've identified through agency budget hearings that needed to be corrected. This additional $46 million, which Craig revised lower, results in a total shortfall of $465 million for the 17-18 biennium. A bit of good news. On the school capital construction front, Craig added $6.5 million in cold lease bonuses that will be deposited in the school capital construction account this fiscal year 2016. This was not the result of a new sale. Rather, it was a result of a timing of a payment that had been sequestered and was deposited, in fact, in November, on which there was some question of. So we immediately added that back, and that will be shown on the school facilities profile. For the balance of the education profile, the news is not as good. We reduced about $8 million in federal mineral royalties for FY16, and the net amount, because all of those accounts on page 4 of the profile are connected, is about $1 million difference. We had a negative $8 million on the school foundation program, a positive $6.5 million on the school capital construction. So it was essentially a wash on FY16. FY16 for the schools does have the benefit of no changes of oil price or natural gas price or production levels have an immediate impact. So all of that impact is felt in the 17-18 biennium. And for those, that biennium, our total net reductions are $53.7 million. There are a number of moving parts for that. Absolutely, reductions to federal mineral royalties, reductions to assessed valuations, reductions to recapture payments. But there were also additional modifications based upon new enrollment numbers and perfections of the calculations. Our staff receives additional updated information in early January, and those have been taken into account. And we'll walk through that on the profile. With respect to the assumptions, we increased oil by $2 million per barrel in calendar year 15. Calendar year 15 is essentially done, although we still have to project what happened with the last 3 months. And candidly, we anticipated that production would drop off faster than it has. I think nationally, that oil production has not dropped off and been as responsive to price as many individuals anticipated. The same is true in Wyoming. That being said, 1 year ago, Wyoming had 38 oil rigs. This year, we have 6 oil rigs, a reduction of 32 oil rigs over the last year. We do anticipate reductions in production of oil on a substantial level, and Craig has essentially 11 to 13% reductions over the next 2 years in oil production. I mentioned our increase to coal lease bonuses of $6.5 million, and those two items are the only positive revisions in the January Craig report. In terms of negative revisions, we reduced our oil price by $3 per barrel to $42 per barrel for calendar year 16, and particularly $38 per barrel for the first 6 months of calendar year 16. That will be an issue. Yesterday's price on WTI was $31 per barrel. Wyoming price ranged from $19 to $25 per barrel, depending on the quality of the oil sold yesterday. You can see that Craig's projection is substantially above market price as of today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Don, I was just wondering about the production numbers, if your examination of Craig's examination of production is solid or if it's varying.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Perkins, yes, and on page 3 of the report, it actually shows that we increased that production for calendar year 15 by 2 million barrels, calendar year 16 by 4 million barrels, and then we kept it the same for calendar year 17 through 20. Production was actually somewhat higher than we anticipated. Nonetheless, we do have those substantial reductions, about 7 million barrels per year, or roughly 11% year over year for the next couple of years in terms of reduction. With so few rigs out there, we believe that those wells, particularly the unconventional oil, will decline precipitously over the next 2 years. And I will get back on the oil price and perhaps why it may not be quite as bad as it seems when you look at the spot price today. But continuing on with the changes that Craig made in January, we reduced natural gas production by 7 million MCF throughout the production period, annual basis of 7 million MCF decline. That is just a precising of the estimate. We have a pretty good handle on the natural decline percent year over year on natural gas. Natural gas prices we reduced by 10 cents for calendar year 15, 35 cents for calendar year 16, and 25 cents for calendar year 17. The final estimates are $2.75, $2.85, and $3 per MMBTU or MCF. Again, I would note that Opal prices yesterday were $2.22, which is a far cry from our $2.75 estimate, or even our $2.85 estimate. A couple of things going on there. First of all, remember this is an annual average over the course of the entire year. In calendar year 15, we certainly enjoyed substantial prices above $2.75 for many months. And so the average is still in the ballpark. In addition, recall that the liquids portion, meaning the condensate in the natural gas stream, is not included in that price. And that liquids portion has been running anywhere from 20 and maybe on the high side 25 to 30 cents per MCF. So you can add that to the Opal spot price to come up with our annual estimate. And finally, for coal production, we reduced the production estimate by 5 million ton per year for calendar year 15, 16, and 17 to 370 million ton, 365 million ton, and 360 million ton. On this item, it is we have two sources of data that are running opposite to each other. The state data is showing that the estimate of 375 million tons annually is right on, within less than a percent. EIA data, which counts coal train cars, is showing that it's 7% low. It's running more at 360 million ton per year. So there's a huge divergence between what the state data is showing and what the federal data is showing. We believe that two things are likely going on. Number one, the last 3 months of calendar year 15, October, November, and December, were extremely poor for coal production, and that information is not yet showing up in the state data. At the same time, EIA has made multiple substantial revisions to their own data, not unlike the CPI, where they will estimate what the inflation rate is and then come back in 3 months later and re-estimate or revise their estimate. They did that for this spring and included millions of tons of additional production.
Don, could I interrupt you? Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes, Don, what's the acronym EIA stand for, please?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ross, my apologies, the Energy Information Administration, which is a federal entity that puts out weekly reports with respect to all energy commodity production. We do concur that it is declining. The question is by how much. So the 370, 365, and 360 seem to be roughly in the ballpark. I would also note that this change, unlike the price of oil or the price of natural gas, has a relatively modest change on the total revenue generated. Now, some defense of the estimate. I think after looking at the spot prices today on oil and gas in particular, an observer could reasonably ask, what reality is Craig living in? Well, for the first 5 months of the fiscal year, so essentially July through November, our October estimate is running 1% behind our actual revenues, meaning the revenues are exceeding our Craig estimate in October, anywhere between $5 to $12 million. The revenues were low if you look at the first 5 months of this fiscal year. Coal is spot on. Oil is generating more revenue than we anticipated. Oil prices are higher than we anticipated in October. Natural gas is spot on. Sales and use taxes are running ahead of our October estimate. Investments in the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund and pooled income are both running $4 million combined ahead of our projection. The School Foundation Program investment earnings are running $360,000 ahead, and the all other revenue are either on target seasonally adjusted or up to $5 million ahead. That's cigarette taxes, franchise taxes, and the like. So when you look through the first 5 months of the fiscal year, the October estimate really couldn't be any closer. And it's actually right where I would like it. We miss it to the downside, meaning we generate more revenue than the estimate by a few $10 million. That's right where I'd like to be. However, we recognize that there is a shift in the energy markets in the past month or so that is another leg downside. And that has a ripple effect through, so it will take time for that to catch up in the revenues. So we've gone from perhaps as much as $12 million ahead of projection, and we're taking off an additional $32 million. So we're basically saying the next 5 months we're going to be down by $44 million. if you take any one component, and picking on oil and gas price again, I think you can certainly make a case, and some members of Craig would, that our estimates are too low. But when you take it in combination with the price of Trona, the other revenues, the franchise taxes, our October estimate does not look that far off. That's a bit of the conundrum, I guess, and the reasoning behind our bolded language on page one. With that, I'd be happy to walk through the profile or the goldenrod, unless there are any questions on the background assumptions.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Don, will you be getting into the issue of where we are for 1920 on schools? Will you be talking about that today? I'd like to get some update on that if we can.
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman, we can discuss that. Moving to the goldenrod, page one. This is a unique session for the legislature. So I'm not entirely sure what the base point or the base jumping point off is. Normally, when I present, I would be able to say the most important number of the day or the most important number of the profile is the far right-hand side underlined by two amounts, and you can see a negative $45 million. But that really doesn't tell you the same thing that it used to tell you, because the recommendation to expend from the LSRA. So my guess is our bottom line might be on page three, in the middle of the page, showing the total reduction in the LSRA from $1.8 billion to $1.56 billion. And unfortunately, that still is not a full indication, because a little bit higher on page three, you can see $197.7 million of additional revenue. That is an indication of the governor's recommendation for 1% severance tax diversion from the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund to the LSRA to pay back. So it's really a combination of multiple numbers. Once we settle on policymakers, this is an effort. Once we settle on what the baseline number should be, we will print that on the front page as to whether we want to track the general fund balance or the LSRA balance or a combination of both. So this does not take into account all of those changes. The first item I would identify, going back to page one, is the difference between the first column and the second column. You can see a reduction of your essentially $5 million underwater with the governor's recommendation. And actually, I would argue that $5 million negative is appropriate, because the governor is only required to carry over 104.7 rather than 109.8. So that is actually reasonable in column one with his October recommendations. Unfortunately, the January recommendations, which is the second column, is essentially $32 million worse off. And you'll say, well, it's not quite $32 million. What else is going on? And you will recall in the third line at the top where it says increase in general fund reversions transferred to the BRA, that number increased $1.3 million. So we actually benefited from some givebacks. But essentially, the difference between column one and column two is $32 million lower in revenue. Right. So, Mr. Chairman, let me actually walk through the calculation. Negative 36 minus $5 million to the left, and then plus the 1.3, which appears above from the reversions, is the net difference of approximately $32 million in revenue.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Greer.
So we're identifying reversions and basically booking those between October and January. Will we be doing that at a quicker pace as we move into the budget session, or is this something we'll wait till the end of the fiscal year?
To.
Or is that to be decided?
Well, I don't know. We're waiting on some reversions still. And we talked about it 2 days ago at one of our larger agencies.
Chairman?
Those are general fund dollars that should have already come back. And Ms. Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Don, do you know, I mean, at some point, can you get us a list of what agencies haven't, what agencies we're still waiting for reversions on?
Yeah,
please?
We've got.
No,
and I think, Don, just that's what we always do. I mean, reversions come back and count to the positive. I mean, that's what we always do. They always return the general fund. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, it is. This is something that the legislature has worked, and the state auditor's office has worked hard on. We cleaned up essentially a decade's worth of reversions. Unfortunately, 13-14 reversions were due 15 months ago, October of 2014. It's been 15 months, and there are still agencies out there that have not completed their reversion. So essentially, I don't want to make a value judgment, but we're following the same pattern. And it's not many agencies. There's Department of Family Services and a couple small ones. The vast majority of agencies have fully complied.
Okay.
Do you have Don, do you have a
Representative Nicholas?
Do you have a rough estimate of what those reversions would be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, the biggest agency outstanding is Department of Family Services. They have about $15.6 million of unobligated prior appropriations. The challenge with that agency is it's a mix of federal and general funds, so that $16 million is some mix. And it would be difficult for me to hazard a guess. If you used their general appropriation, it's about 50-50. So you'd expect about 7.5 or 8 million. However, it's quite possible that they spent their general funds before their federal funds, so I'm reluctant to make any.
Okay. Go ahead, continue.
In the next two columns on page one of the profile, we have the 17-18 biennium with the governor's recommendations. And I will say that throughout the profile, the executive branch candidly may not agree with the profile because they will say, well, that's not what the governor recommended. We gave the governor every benefit and detriment of all changes. So when you look at the governor's budget here, you will see he has a $20 million appropriation for the legislature. We reduced that to $18 million because we now have more information based upon the Management Council bill. When we get to the education bill, it becomes even more stark, where the new enrollment figures and some other adjustments were embedded in the changes to the good and to the bad for the governor. That's the way we've always done it, but I recognize it that there it's not a direct correlation to what his profile is because the environment has changed. In any event, you can see the difference between the third column and the fourth column is roughly $75.8 million. And how I get that is I take the positive $29 million and the negative $45 million. Again, there are multiple things going on here. There is the reduction in the general fund appropriation for the legislature. There's also the carryover, the $32 million that we were short in 16 becomes makes the hole deeper in 17-18. So if you recall my prior remarks, I said the total change was $32 million immediately and $46 million for the next biennium. If you add those two together, you get $78 million, and that's essentially the difference between the 29 and the 45, again, with the minor change of the legislature's appropriation and the $1.3 million reversions. It's not clear to us, you know, in future days, we'll find out with you whether or not the governor has governor's letters to fix the $32 million shortfall for this current fiscal year or to address the reduced revenue in 17 and 18, or whether that will be left to the legislature. On page two is just the general fund. There's very little here that I will highlight except for the bottom line on the third and fourth column, so GovsRec 17-18. You will see that in his December 1st, he left about almost $30 million on the table for the legislature, and he did that by taking it out of the LSRA. Unfortunately, we've reduced revenues, so that $29 million is no longer available for legislative appropriation. So you will see in the next column it's zero. Going on to page three on the budget reserve account. You can identify at the top of page three, the governor left, again, third column, 17-18 GovsRec, when he submitted this in December, he left the full $104.55 million statutory reserve amount on the table in that account per statute. Unfortunately, we've had a $46 million decrease to that, to our revenues for 17-18, and you will see a similar, so we only have $58 million left in that carryover. The legislature is not subject to that 5% statutory reserve amount. You could take that down to zero if you want. The statute only applies to the governor. The next account there is the LSRA. I wanted to identify a couple of things going on. First of all, on the far third and fourth columns, about halfway down, you'll see a $203.4 million and $197.7 million. That is the effect of the 1% severance tax diversion from the PMTF to the LSRA per the governor's recommendations. You can also see a reduction of oil prices and natural gas prices. I used to ballpark and say, well, it's $100 million a year. And it was really $101.5. But you can see, just because of those prices, now it's only $197 million, or maybe $98 million per year. So each time we reduce price, that the amount of revenue generated from the 1% also declines. You can also see the number of appropriations that the governor made from this account for capital construction, local governments, surface transportation, and other one-time funding requests, and then the decreased balance of roughly $250 million, I believe. Yes, $250 million from 118 to 1 point, or excuse me, 1.8 billion to 1.56 billion dollars. Another way to look at that, and I know the governor included this in his budget message, he also indicated that if we receive the full 5% spending policy amount in terms of capital gains over the next two biennia, we would generate about, I believe it's $83 million per year for that, and that would restore this account substantially.
So that's not profiled.
That is not profiled. Yeah. The last account on that page isn't worth discussing. There is no.
Now, again, and that's part of our change. What was it, Senate File 46? That's the that will receive if we reach our spending policy amount 1.25%, which is at $83-85 million a year. Is that correct? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Representative Greer?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. So how will that be profiled and when? Because it'll be after
July 1st.
After July 1st. So we won't see that on – we'll see a lag, and that'll be profiled on the goldenrod that comes out with the October Craig in 16. Is that the first time we'll see it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, unfortunately not quite. And it's October 2017. Because that bill doesn't become effective.
I understand. I got it. Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Mr. Co-Chair.
So on that, Don, I think with Senate File 46, we split 1.25 to SIPA, 1.25 to LSRA, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other 2.5 went
to general
fund, right? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, that is exactly correct. And the 2.5 to the general fund is guaranteed. And so, candidly, we're only projecting 2.1% rather than 2.5. So the additional 0.4% is coming out of the PMTF spending policy reserve account, and we'll see that on page 5.
Okay.
In fact, I'll jump. We'll come back to education, if that's all right,
sure.
To page 4. And I'll jump to page 5.
Sorry about that.
On the top of page 5 is the SFRA, or the School Foundation Program Reserve Account. The only item there is you can see that the governor recommended, as part of his 2016 budget reductions, a intercept of $48.8 million of the sweep to address the shortfall in FY16. This count will also receive up to 2% of revenue in excess of the first 3%. The first 3% on the school side goes to the SFP. The next 2% would go to this account to the extent we generate more than 3% in investment income. At the current pace, and that bill becomes effective this fiscal year, not next, or that provision. Unfortunately, at the current rate of investment earnings, including capital gains, we do not anticipate that we would reach 3%.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don, and is that statutory?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, it is.
Great, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, the next account in there is the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund Spending Policy Reserve account. And the item that I would highlight is the auto appropriation in columns 3 and 4 of $50 million. This is essentially to ensure that the general fund receives the full 2.5% because in dividends and interests are currently estimated to be 2.1%. So it essentially needs about $25 million each fiscal year to be made whole. Hopefully, that transfer never needs to be made. It's just a guarantee that if it does need to be made, this is where the source of the funds will come from. In fact, if we exceed 5%, then this account enjoys anything in excess of 5% up to 90% of the rolling five-year market average. Again, the third account on this page, the Common School Permanent Land Fund Spending Policy Reserve account, you will see the need for $7 million to meet the Craig projection or the guarantee on the school foundation program side in fiscal years 17 and 18. I would also finally jump back to the note under the Permanent Wyoming Mineral Trust Fund Spending Policy right in the middle of the page. Another small bit of good news. The last sentence there, it says the maximum amount, and this is the guarantee appropriation for the Capitol building, the maximum amount to be loaned or used from this account is now estimated at $107 million. In October, that number was 112.5. So the reason it goes down is the account continues to generate interest on the funds that have been deposited, and the account, I mean, the capital renovation and restoration account, continues to earn interest on the funds that have been deposited in that account, as well as small or relatively small reversions for all state capital construction projects. So over the past 5 months or whatnot, we've been able to reduce that down by $5.5 million. That's a good thing. Finally, on the bottom page is the Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation Account, and there is no activity and currently no governor's recommendation to expend funds in 17-18 from that account. The final page is the Water Development Accounts. These are relatively straightforward. None of the revenue changed from October because these accounts enjoy under the cap. I would note one item, and that is in Water Account 1, on the appropriations section, the third and fourth column, you'll see a negative $11,492,578. This also will not match what the governor's profile is. And this was yesterday's discussion with the Attorney General's office regarding the $300,000. Do you want new money or do you want a reappropriation of the prior balance from the Bighorn litigation? So the governor had profiled that as new money. They testified yesterday that they didn't need the new money, so that's a little bit of variation there. Minor point. We'll go back to the page 4 to highlight the school foundation program. Do you want me to touch it or do you want to just...
Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Don, before we do, I want to just go back to the Municipal Solid Waste Landfill Remediation Account. That one has $28 million and... no call for funds there. Can that money be diverted for other purposes? I'm just asking.
Oh, it's all statutory, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is all statutory. There is no constitutional prohibition. Before I turn it over to Matt, again, just for full clarity. Our profile follows prior year's profile, just to make sure we're not hiding anything or whatnot. We do not include the AML funds. I think everyone is aware of the 160 DEQ's testimony of available resources from that amount, $165 million, and some prior year reversions.
Okay, thank you. Matt?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Matt Wilmarth, school finance analyst with the Legislative Service Office. I'll walk you through page four of the fiscal profile, which includes three accounts related to K-12 education. The first account is a school foundation program account. The middle account on the page is a school capital construction account. And then the last account is the permanent land fund holding account. In the first two columns with the 15-16 on the school foundation program account, the changes that occurred in revenue were reductions in federal mineral royalties of about $8 million. And then on the appropriation side, there's a slight change of $800,000, which just is the most updated payments from this school funding model from the Department of Education. And that's to the positive. We still end 15-16 with a $100 million balance. But the estimated transfer to guarantee that $100 million balance from the permanent land fund holding account increases by about $7.3 million. And you can see that on the line in the revenue section titled Section 300K, Chapter 26, 2014 law. On the school capital construction account, as Don mentioned, for 15-16, we did benefit from sequestered coal lease bonus money in the amount of $6.5 million, which increases the transfer down to the permanent land fund holding account. It still leaves you with a balance of $0 at the end of the biennium. On the permanent land fund holding account, the balance changes by that $800,000 for the biennium, but again, the transfer up to the school foundation program account increases by about $7.3 million. I'll highlight the 17-18, and then we can discuss estimated 19-20 after that. Changes for the last two columns for the 17-18 biennium. On the revenue side, revenues are estimated to decrease by about $28.3 million. And this is three places. The first one is in FMRs. The second is in your property tax from the assessed valuation, the 12 mil that we have for statewide education. And then the third reduction comes in your recapture payments to school districts, which is that double whammy effect that we are familiar with. On the appropriation side, we revised our calculations based upon October, based on new model variables of enrollment, assessed valuation, and precise to calculations from October. On the appropriation side, the changes equate to $25.4 million. Increase in appropriations. The other change we made it at and had a profile, and you'll notice on the far right, the January Craig status, the ending balance in the school foundation program account is not $100 million. It's $52.8 million, which is a reduction of $47 million over the October profile. We made this decision based upon the governor's recommendation for capital construction of $87 million. We fully funded that from the permanent land fund holding account transfer, and any balance that which left a zero balance in the permanent land fund holding account, which does not guarantee that $100 million balance in the school foundation program account. On the school capital construction side, there are no changes. On the October to January profiles, but again, as I mentioned in the permanent land fund holding account, the changes in the appropriations to the school foundation program account do not guarantee the $100 million. Going out to 19-20, and we don't publish these on the goldenrod.
Mr. Chairman. Can I interrupt real quick before we go to 19 and 20? Just on 17 and 18, then, the projections we're looking at, that would my understanding is that those projections would not include that ECA from last year. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stumpson, the ECA is profiled. The biennial budget for 15-16, the ECA that was provided for the school districts, that is carried forward. That's part of the governor's recommendation. So we did carry that forward into the 17-18 biennium. And you can see, Mr. Chairman, if you go down, I think it's the sixth line, the 2016 GovRec ECA external cost adjustment, it equates to $58.9 million. And Mr. Chairman, just for clarification purposes, you'll notice in the governor's profile there was a $72 million amount for in October, based upon new calculations from our office. It's now 58.9. Mr. Chairman, if you look in the 17-18 column, the first number on the appropriation side, you'll see the $1.649 billion. That next number down, you'll see a couple blanks. The next number down is $58.9 million. That amount in the October governor profile was $72 million. So there's about a $13 million difference.
And just to be clear, that is just a calculation issue. That is not less money for the ECA year over year. It's about as if the ECA was based upon the guarantee rather than the entitlement. That's not actually the issue there, but it's entirely a calculation issue. The full amount of the ECA for 15 and 16 is included in the governor's profile in terms of dollars for 17-18.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, for 19-20, revenues, and I'll go slow so the members can write these down. We'll start with a $52.8 million balance, and then that leaves us with estimated revenues for 19-20 in the foundation program of $1.39 billion. On the appropriations side, we assume the governor's recommendations carry forward, and we assume the ECA carries forward that was passed in 15-16. So for total appropriations, the foundation program, we estimate $1.95 billion, which leaves an estimated shortfall of $515.8 million.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead, Don.
We didn't want to make this any more confusing than it is, but we will email you 19 and 20 scenarios, and I suspect there will be additional scenarios. But right now we have 19-20 scenario under the UW-REX, meaning the UW capital construction estimates. We have, and I've spoken with both of them, we have the 19 and 20 scenario under the speaker and the president's no CapCon in excess of revenues scenario. I suspect there will be additional interest in 19 and 20 scenarios, assuming we reach the 5% full investment income. We haven't done that one yet, but we will provide all of those in writing, so you don't have to write all of these down.
Sure. And then so as you move down the page, the school CapCon, the revenues then for school CapCon in 19-20 or $25 million, is that what's under the cap flows?
Mr. Chairman, it's $26.7 million, and that comes from FMRs and state royalties. No co-lease bonus are profiled.
Right. And then and just to remind, so our just to run the department is $13 million a year.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Biennium.
Yep.
And then to major maintenance, 21 million square feet at our current level. That's what? That's 100.
Mr. Chairman, it's 118.5.
118.5, and that number moves around a little bit, but that's pretty solid. So those, so to run the department, 13 million, 118 million for major maintenance, that's not building one elementary school. You know, you're sitting at 131 million on, and we've got 26.7 in revenue.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, and if you were to carry over the balance from the University of Wyoming's capital construction estimate of what they thought we would spend in 17, 18.
Just to clarify, people that might be listening, that was a study that we had done with University of Wyoming economists, kind of looked at the whole big picture of the recapitalizing the asset over 50 years. And so go ahead and carry on. And their recommendation then was what?
Yep. Mr. Chairman, if you carry forward their recommendations, so you carry forward the balance that you didn't appropriate in 17, 18 and what they expected to spend in 19, 20, you have about $309.2 million still left out there for capital construction to.
So that estimate, including major maintenance, is what, about $220 million a biennium? Is that what that was? I'm just trying to work.
Mr. Chairman, I think it was about $200 million. 220 but major maintenance is about $120 million a year.
Yeah, so it was about an $80 million CapCon budget of theirs. That's how I recall it.
Mr. Chairman, on the later end, they front loaded the 17-18 pretty high.
Oh, they did.
It was around $250 million.
Oh, okay.
And then after it dropped down.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Okay, and so, and the only thing that could change, well, a lot of things could change, but you do not profile the full spa amount, which is about $45 million a year on the school side. Is that what that is?
33.
Yeah.
Oh, it's 33 per percent. So 2% would be 66.
66 per year. So even if all in on all that, the deficit is... is about $390 million.
Well, Mr. Chairman, in your foundation program account, well, as I said, based on current assumptions and estimates, it's about $515 million shortfall or negative balance, $515.8 million negative balance.
Take $120 off that if you're all in. So $400 million.
And then you have another $400 million in the capital construction account.
Yeah. With just having a school facilities department. Okay. Everybody got their – any questions? Mr. Co-Chair?
And the reality of that is that $515 million, there's no revenue source for that at this point in time. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, unless the legislature chooses to appropriate from other sources, general fund, LSRA –
you got LSRA, and that's the only lifeline you got out there.
Well, and I think, you know, and that's part, you look at the revenues in the schools. You look at all our revenues are volatile, but if you look at locals, you got a lot of property taxes, a little more steady. State has some property tax, some others. But schools, it's all minerals. I mean, it's pretty volatile. Would you say, I mean, that's got to be the most volatile part of our budget is school funding.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I mean, the mineral side feeds into the assessed valuation, which affects the 12 mil, the 25, and the 6 mil.
70%.
Mr. Chairman?
Okay. So Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't remember, but as we look at on assessed valuations, what's the relationship of proportionately between, like, state assessed, mineral assessed, you know, the state assesses the minerals, but between the minerals and the other assessed valuation statewide, what's the...
About 70%.
Is it about 70% minerals and
30%? Yeah, 70% of the...
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking it wasn't quite that high.
Tails there.
Could be. That's going to change as the minerals go down.
Well, then it's really a triple whammy because the recapture drops from those mineral-rich counties. And go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I agree. It was maybe in the 70% range, but if you look at the last page of the Craig report, it goes to become about 50-50.
Yeah.
And we do have, in the other property, we do have, pipelines and other railroads that are state assessed in there.
Yeah.
One more global item on page 4 before we leave that. And it becomes self-evident, but I think a carry, assuming the governor's recommendations on capital construction, you can see in 17 and 18, the entire PLF holding account of $550 million is exhausted, and the school foundation program's $100 million balance goes down to essentially 50. So we've go through roughly $600 million in one biennium.
$600 million. So to say that again, I want to just make sure everybody heard that. So to say that again, this current in the governor's budget, we're going to spend about $600 million in our savings that we've saved on the education side. We're going to spend $600 million in the next 2 years under this proposal.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, any other questions? Okay, anything else, Don? Mr. Co-Chair?
Thank you. Don, I'm just wondering, I mean, for the members, if there's a one- or two-page thing that you can do that makes it – this goldenrod's more difficult than any other that I've seen since I've been in the legislature in 95 to track this. Is there a way to assimilate that to make it more user-friendly for particularly the body and for the public?
Mr. Chairman, I think we could do a bullet point exercise. Another issue, which is becomes a policy issue at some point, the front page is a summary of the general fund and budget reserve account. And we had to do that at some point because we started using the budget reserve account like a checking account, candidly. In the governor's budget, the LSRA becomes another appropriations account as opposed to a reserve account.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to fully capture this, you really have to add the LSRA plus the budget reserve plus the general fund and put that on the front page. I'm not suggesting that, but that may be like a alternative approach there. And that has, you know, other implications that are beyond staff to make that decision. But we can do that.
Yeah. Okay, we'll figure that out. Okay, Senator Perkins.
And one other thing, too, I think one other thing that in talking with the treasurer's office, the other thing that's happened is we have these kind of, as you know, as we had the slowdown, we've had these burgeoning cash accounts, and so the other problem we have is you start to use the budget reserve account, is that we end up being at short of cash at times. We're starting to get into that area where the cash management becomes much more important. So there's a number of challenges that are happening as we're having our contracting economy we need to keep in mind.
Spoken like a true accountant. Okay, thank you. That's a good point. Okay, anything else? Okay, let's take a 5-minute break and then we'll come back with corrections. Thank you. Okay, we're okay, we're back with Department of Corrections Agency 80. I think we're on Division 3000 now. Is that right?
Correct, Mr. Chairman.
And that's page 162.
That's correct.
So we'll pick up where we left off. So go ahead, Director.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Again, I'm Bob Langford, Director of the Department of Corrections. Here at the table with me is Steve Lindley, and the same representatives we had yesterday are here again this morning. As the chairman mentioned, the first section of the budget will...
Thank you.
As the chairman noted, the first section of the budget we'll be getting into this morning is Budget Division 3000, which begins on page 162. But before we go there, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to take just a minute to address a concern raised by Representative Conley yesterday regarding the funding for Budget Unit 1038, which was the sex offender treatment, and the FY1516 Series 600-900 report. That 600-900 Series report showed that we paid Westcare, who is the vendor that delivers sex offender treatment, $4.1 million, and the sex offender piece of that is $2.5 million. And the reason why the 600-900 series report shows the 4.1 is they were our vendor who delivered both substance abuse treatment and sex offender treatment up through the middle of the biennium. At that time, when we rebid the contracts, we got a new vendor, Gateway, for the substance abuse pieces of that, and Westcare will continue with the sex offender treatment portion, which is... At the current time, the contract's $1.7 million, which accounts for the $8 million that we returned of sex offender money, or $800,000 we returned of sex offender money in the FY15-16 turned back. That's the current contract amount, $1.7 of that $2.5. That accounts for the delivery of treatment and as well as the administrative costs. The reason that we didn't carry that $800,000 projected revenue give back forward is because we haven't negotiated that contract for this upcoming biennium yet. So we're not sure what that amount will be. We'll keep it as close to the 1.7 as we can, but we still need some flex to manage that budget. And then we would at that time be ready to turn back any excess.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Conley.
Simply thank you.
Mr. Chairman, one additional information in regards to that program. At the current cost per day for the residential portion of that sex offender treatment is $14.22 a day at the Women's Center and $12.88 at WMCI. And then we have, of course, the outpatient portion of that, which is running about $8.89 a day. Two other items from yesterday. Mr. Chairman, before we move on, in 1018, we talked about asking for extension of the 308 spending authority to continue our authority to spend vacancy or personnel savings towards recruitment. And we believe that we wouldn't need that full $1.6 million in the next biennium. At the very least, if that authority is not carried forward, we would request permission to carry the remainder of our expenditures for the 1.6 into the next biennium to allow that contract to run its course. And then finally, yesterday, Mr. Chairman, you asked about potential general fund additional savings for FY15-16 based on the LSO report. I believe that we could, if pushed to that point, identify between $5 and $6 million more that could be removed from our general fund for FY15-16 in order to help address the additional shortfall.
Is Say yes.
Okay.
What? Say yes, we'll take it.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't have to say yes to that anymore.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
The camp's a prison facility with an assigned capacity of 311 inmates. That includes 64 close custody boot camp inmates, 4 segregation beds, and 243 minimum security beds. Average daily population in calendar year 2015 at the camp was 280, with most of those vacant beds being in the boot camp program. Though the boot camp has a capacity of 64 inmates, it typically has fewer than 50 assigned at any given time. The average per inmate per cost per day at the Honor Camp is $106.83. There are a total of 96 full-time positions and 1 AWAC position assigned to this budget division. There's 14 vacancies according to the last report I had at the end of December. This facility had the highest turnover rate of any of our facilities last year at 26%. According to surveys given to leaving staff, 2/3 of the turnover was due to accepting other employment, moving out of area, or other personal reasons for voluntarily separating, including such things as difficulty finding affordable housing and lack of predictable pay raises. This facility has a fleet of 10 facility-owned and 12 leased vehicles.
The Mr. Chairman.
Representative Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, just a little aside on this. Are, with the energy business being in the state it's in now, are you not losing as many people to that industry as you have been?
Mr. Chairman, it's difficult to say. They're still trying to recruit our staff because our staff have a proven work record at the mines and in the energy fields. In addition, a number of the people that have been laid off in the energy sector have left the state. So when the jobs occur, they still look for our people first. So they're still recruiting us.
Okay, thank
you. Mr. Chairman, this facility has a fleet of 10 facility-owned and 12 leased vehicles. The leased vehicles are used primarily for inmate transport and staff travel. The agency-owned vehicles are used for facility maintenance. There are 15 cell phones assigned to the facility, including those assigned to transport and forced recruits, and all except emergency contingency phones are receiving regular use. As you can see on page 162, the total recommended biennial budget for this facility is $17,259,647. The offender management unit, 311, is presented on pages 163 and 4. This is basically the security component of the facility. It includes a total of 58 full-time positions comprised of 1 captain, 4 lieutenants, 7 sergeants, 3 corporals, and 44 correctional officers. There are currently 10 correctional officer vacancies at the camp. The governor recommends approval of a standard budget of $8,389,942, and we'd request you concur. Unit 312 is offender supplies on pages 165 and 6 in the amount of $546,524. Governor recommendation is approval of that amount. There are no employees attached to this unit. Unit 3021, facility management, is on pages 167 and 8, includes the facility's 5 maintenance employees who are responsible for a physical plant comprised of 21 buildings with 121,150 square feet of building space and 42 acres attached to the institution. Governor recommends the standard budget of $1,013,870 be approved as submitted. Unit 3022 on pages 169 and 170 is facility operations with no positions attached. Governor recommends approval of the standard budget of $843,097 as submitted. Unit 3031 on pages 171 and 2 is the administration unit budget. This unit has 134 full-time positions. I'm sorry, that's not right. I typed that wrong. It's 13, I think. Full-time positions attached to it and is responsible for things like administration, accounting, human resources, fiscal accounting, and communications. Standard budget amount submitted was $2,323,720, which the governor recommends for approval.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead. Senator Burns?
Help me out as far as where the conservation camp fits in the scheme of things. You've got medium security in Torrington and maximum security down in Rollins and then the Honor Farm. Where does the conservation camp fit in that?
The conservation camp is primarily, Mr. Chairman, the conservation camp is primarily a minimum custody facility. There's, I think I said, 238 beds of minimum custody. Then there's the boot camp portion, which is considered a close custody, higher custody program within that. So the overall rating for the facility is minimum custody, but there is a double-fenced section of that, which is the boot camp.
So if I was a prisoner, would I strive to go to the Honor Farm or go to the conservation camp?
Both, Mr. Chairman. The Honor Farm is an agricultural operation, and the conservation camp is primarily a forestry operation. So they both have similar privileges and freedoms, and both are minimum custody.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the food service budget for the camp is outlined on unit 3032 on pages 173 and 175. There are four full-time positions attached to this unit, although they have consistently asked for a fifth position. As you can see on page 173, this unit used to generate revenue by preparing meals for the Weston County Jail, but that contract ended at the end of fiscal year 2014. Therefore, you'll see an exception request on page 174, requesting a reduction in spending authority of $73,439. Governors recommended to accept this reduction and approve the agency or remaining agency request of $1,592,077. Are there any questions about that one?
Okay.
On pages 176 to 80, that details Unit 3033, which is programming. There are 12 full-time positions in this unit. This unit provides for inmate programs, caseworkers, and inmate recreation. Programs are delivered by unit staff. That are delivered by unit staff include things like Thinking for a Change, parenting, and victim awareness. They are also responsible for developing and maintaining individualized case plans for each inmate. Governor recommends approval of the standard budget amount of $1,783,227 as submitted. There is an exception request on page 177. The request was to convert the religious consultant position that we talked about yesterday from an independent contract position to a general funded full-time position. Again, we had that discussion yesterday, but the position was reviewed by the Attorney General's office, determined because we do need to control the work that they do, that they fell under the category of employee and therefore were entitled to health coverage. So the governor recommended that the position be moved from independent contractor to a newly authorized AWAC position eligible for health care coverage, and that the agency move $44,600 in general funds from Object Code 0901 to 0110 to continue funding the position. We would ask for your approval. The required exception personnel report detailing the exchange is on page 180. Any additional questions about that conversion?
Senator Burns.
How did you arrive at, or whoever it was, how did you arrive at that salary?
Mr. Chairman, that's the amount that was within the budget for the out of the 900 series for that position. We've had to supplement that amount, but that's the amount that was dedicated in the budget for it. So it just would move the existing contract money for that position to general fund, to 100 series to cover the position.
Well, it looks like there's a substantial difference between them.
There is. Mr. Chairman, it's not a full-time position for one, and it was negotiated at a different time than the remaining positions, so it's a lower budget impact at the time of the development of the budget, I guess is the way to say it. Does that answer your question?
Not really, but okay.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. So, as I recall yesterday's discussion, there was two that were part-time. Is that correct? Of the chaplains? And this is one of them?
This is one of the two that is considered
and
to be
part-time. So not affected
part-time.
By the ACA necessarily?
It depends on the number of hours we end up contracting for, according to what I heard yesterday. We anticipated that all of them would be reverted to employ positions in order to allow us to actually meet the need. But we've been contracting at the level that the budget allowed for the most part. If you ask the wardens at the farm and where's the other one? Yeah. And the camp, if they need a full-time religious consultant, they would say yes. But they haven't gotten that because of the budget limitations. So that's the reason that it was included, or both those positions were included in the changeover to an AWAC position. But if we kept the number of hours to the level that they're at now, according to what I heard yesterday, they would not need the medical authorization.
Okay. Is that, Kevin, does that comport with your understanding?
You need.
Mr. Chairman, yes, and that they moved up the available amount of 900 series money up, but we did not give them any additional funds. So, again, with all the ACA requirements, we are not, I guess what we've basically said is the agency has to manage it within their budget. So in this case, we moved up what was available in 900, but give them no additional appropriation.
Okay. All right. Continue.
And just a heads up to the members of the committee, those similar requests are going to appear five more times. So, education unit at each of our facilities provides inmates with life skill, GED, adult basic education, literacy, and keyboarding classes, along with vocational education classes. Education unit at the camp, which is unit 3034 on pages 181 and 2, has four full-time positions attached, including one education manager and three certified instructors. The governor's recommendation would be to approve the standard budget ask in the amount of $767,190.
What?
And that completes.
Why would you need one manager for three instructors? I mean, it's like having a principal for three teachers. Tell me the difference, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, our education, overall education manager is not here, so I don't know how to answer that. I don't know if there's a requirement for licensure purposes or otherwise to have a manager at each of the facilities. I will tell you that manager position or that is involved in classroom work as well as the overall management of the program.
Okay. I'm seeing some head nods, yes. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Stubson.
Mr. Chairman, I note in your narrative it talks about some cooperative work with Eastern Wyoming College. And is that, does the Honor Camp have to pay for those classes or are those, or do the inmates have to pay for those? How do those get handled?
Mr. Chairman, we have an agreement with several of our community colleges where our staff actually deliver the classroom instruction and supervision and are basically quasi, I guess, adjunct staff so that there's no tuition charges for those programs to the inmates. So it's our staff delivering their program under their normal job duties.
And so, Mr. Chairman, then do they acquire college credit for those classes?
Mr. Chairman, for the vocational or welding, they do. For the keyboarding, they do.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, that completes Division 3000. And the next division is 4000, which is the Women's Center in Lusk, which, as you probably know, is the women's or the only standalone female facility in the state. This facility has a total capacity of 296 beds, including the unoccupied mother-child building. The normal operating capacity is 277 beds. The average inmate population last fiscal year was 252, though there were several times when the population peaked and we had to temporarily displace a dozen or so inmates to county jail rental beds and to the OBGYN unit at the Wyoming Medium Correctional Institution. The cost per inmate per day is around $117.80. There are a total of 107 employee positions assigned to the Women's Center with 24 vacancies at last report. This facility has a turnover rate of 20% this last calendar year. 43% of that turnover was due to accepting other employment. Although there has traditionally been an issue with the availability of affordable housing, which was aggravated by last summer's flood. This facility has a vehicle fleet of 2 facility-owned and 10 leased vehicles. Again, the leased vehicles are used for inmate transport and staff travel, with the agency-owned used for facility maintenance. There are 8 cell phones assigned to this facility, and all except the emergency contingency phones are receiving regular use. The first Women's Center budget appears on pages 184 to 188. Unit 4011 Offender Management includes 68 correctional security positions, and there are 17 correctional officer vacancies at the Women's Center as of December 31. It has a standard budget of $9,651,166, which the governor recommends you approve. You will see an exception request on page 185. This request was to seek approval of full-time positions that have been deferred since 2006, when initial staffing was requested to staff the expanded facility. At that time, the legislature deferred because the population, the inmate population, hadn't reached capacity, and they said to come back when we got nearer to capacity. Well, we're at capacity now, and this request in the amount of $842,176 was for 6 additional correctional officers and 1 additional corporal to meet the staffing requirements of a fully functional population with the increased population at WWC, and to also staff the Women Child Program that cannot be put into full operation without additional positions. The governor recommended denial of the exception request, and the exception personnel reports on page 188. We concur with the governor's recommendation. Are there any questions about the security staffing component at WWC?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Burns.
The mother-child program, the building's empty right now. What's the demand?
Well, Mr. Chairman, today we don't have a demand for the beds in total. We have had, I believe, six inmates, pregnant inmates this last year, deliver. So there is a demand for that program, but we don't have the staffing to fill the program. The beds, certainly, if we had the additional 15 beds, we wouldn't have had to send inmates temporarily to county jails instead of housing them in our own facility, but we didn't have that luxury this last year.
So what's happening now with the women who deliver the babies?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, at this time when they deliver, the child immediately goes to
relatives
or foster care.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, next up is Unit 4012, which is Offender Supply on page 189 and 90. Standard budget as submitted was $463,735. There's no staff attached and no exception requests. The Facility Management Unit 4021 is pages 191 and 192. The maintenance department manages 148,465 square feet of building space within 4 buildings and 71 acres of land. There are 5 staff positions tied to this unit. There's no exception request. Governor recommends approval of standard budget of $1,210,099 as submitted. Unit 4022, Facility Operations, is on page 193 and 4. Again, there are no employee positions and no exception request. Governor recommends a standard budget of $956,326. Facility Administration Unit 4031 is on pages 195 and 6. There are 14 full-time positions attached to this budget with a standard budget request of $2,411,504, which the governor recommends you approve. Food service at the Women's Center is Unit 4032 on pages 197 and 9. Like the camp, there are 4 employees assigned to food service, although they too have asked for an additional staff. Also like the camp, they used to have a revenue stream by providing meals, but for the Niobrara County Detention Center, which also ended the contract at the end of fiscal year 14. As you'll see on page 198, we're seeking a reduction in spending authority in the amount of $16,151 as a result. The governor's recommended you accept the exception request and recommended approval of the resulting budget amount of $1,276,295. $910, as shown on the bottom right of page 199. Programming is the next budget unit, 4033, on pages 200 to 205. There are seven positions attached at this time. Governor recommends the standard budget as submitted of $1,211,291 with an amendment to the total number of staff positions to account for the conversion of the religious consultant from a contract position or an at-will, not an at-will, from a service contract position to an at-will AWAC position. Are there any questions regarding that standard budget or that addition?
Mr. Co-Chair.
This chaplain's position, is this a full-time or is it a part-time?
It is a full-time.
What's the other one so I don't have to go through this each
time? The two part-time are at the camp and the honor farm.
Okay. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chairman, there was a little bit of clarification given to me because it seemed like a disconnect from what the Attorney General was saying yesterday. And so we were told by employee group insurance that 20 hours and over this the ACA insurance fell into play. And yesterday they were saying above 30 hours. So that's why we have it in on these 20-hour jobs. But they're Newcastle, you know, the two male minimum facilities, Newcastle and Remington. So.
The first exception request to Unit 4033 is on page 201 and was for the additional caseworker position that was previously deferred back in 2006 to meet the staffing requirement for the expanded inmate population and the women child program. Again, the governor recommended denial. The second exception request on page 202 details the religious consultant position that we've already talked about. And that would require the agency to move $97,000 in general funds between object codes to continue funding the position. Again, we would ask for your approval. The exception personnel reports on page 205. Pages 206 to 208 reflect the education unit at the Women's Center. There are seven positions in the education unit with a standard budget submittal amount of $1,206,768. Governor recommends approval of this amount. Women's Center has a prison industry unit, 4061, on pages 209 and 210. The industrial operations at the Women's Center include the aquaculture operation, which raises tilapia fish, and the garment shop that manufactures a variety of clothing items. There are two full-time positions attached to the WWC Industries. The governor recommends approval of the standard budget of $375,788 as submitted, and we would ask for your concurrence. That concludes the Division 4000. Are there any questions regarding the Women's Center?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Burns.
Where are they selling these tilapia?
Mr. Chairman, we have a contract with a vendor who transports them live to Denver and then sells them at the fish market in Denver. So,
And so where's that reflected in the money that makes?
That's in the industry's revenue account that we talked about previously in terms of and I don't remember the budget number off the top of my head. In 1041 is where the revenue shows up.
Where is that at, though? It's not in this unit, is it?
No, it's in unit 1041, which we talked about yesterday.
Okay.
Page 133.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman.
Oh, Senator Pastor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Lampert, I just want to go back to Senator Burns' question on the mother-child and just kind of refresh my memory on how did we not I don't know, it didn't seem like it was too long ago we allocated funds or to build or refurbish a portion of the Women's Center for the mother-child. And then you have the beds, but then I understand to say you don't have the staffing to do that. Could you elaborate on that a little bit more, a little bit of the history and then where that ended?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hastert, I don't remember the year, but I think it was about 2009. that we received money to renovate the prior, at one time I think it was a work release building at the Women's Center, and then it was a minimum custody dorm, convert that to host a women and child's program, understanding that that was recommended as a best practice. And we received, seems like it was about $1 million to renovate that building. At that same time, we asked for the staff positions that had been deferred previously, and again, they were again deferred. Since that time, we've identified that if we were able to fully staff the existing security positions at the Women's Center, we could put into partial operation that facility, not a full-time women child's program, but an overnight reunification program, if you will. But we wouldn't be able to fully staff that building full-time operation without additional positions. So that was the six deferred positions that I mentioned just a few minutes ago for security in order to fully operate that building and that program. So rather than having the women be able to retain their newborns for up to 18 months to allow for that that bonding that has proven to be, I guess, important both for the child as well as the mother in terms of and has an impact on recidivism, we haven't been able to do that. And just Mr. Lindley handed me a note. There is two pieces of that. One is the women child, the newborn piece, and the other is the reentry or family reunification piece. And the reunification piece is the piece that we could do if we were fully staffed with existing staff. The women child, where the woman would keep possession or custody of their child for the 18 months, would require additional staff. Any further questions regarding that?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going back to page 134, and this is the brand industries. This is not just the tilapia, is it?
Mr. Chairman, that's revenues from all of our industry programs.
All the industry programs.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, just out of curiosity, how much of that is, I mean, how much revenue do you make on the tilapia operations?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know off the top of my head. It's in our annual industry report that just came to the legislature, but I didn't bring a copy of it, so I can't answer you right today, but we'll find that information out for you. Division 5000, which is the Wyoming Honor Farm in Riverton, begins on page 211. Governor recommends a total budget for this division of $16,251,202 and an increase of one AWAC position, which, again, we'll discuss in a minute. The Honor Farm is a minimum security facility, total operating capacity of 283 and a normal operating capacity of 269, including a residential substance abuse treatment unit with a capacity of 74. Treatment unit is almost always operated at full capacity, and the average daily inmate population at the facility last year was 264. Average daily cost per bed is $98.45. There are a total of 80 employee positions currently assigned, with 7 vacancies at last report. This facility has a turnover rate of 22.5% this last calendar year. 70% of that turnover was by voluntary separation due to personal reasons, and 30% resulted from dismissals from service. This facility has a vehicle fleet of 26 facility-owned and 12 leased vehicles. The leased vehicles are used primarily for inmate transport and staff travel. The agency-owned vehicles are licensed vehicles and equipment used for farm operations and facilities maintenance. There are 8 cell phones assigned to this facility, and all except emergency contingency phones were receiving regular use. The first Honor Farm budget unit is 5011, Offender Management, on pages 212 and 213. There are 41 security staff positions tied to this unit. 30 of those are correctional officers. There are 2 correctional officer vacancies. The standard budget as submitted is $6,005,689, which the governor recommends for approval.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Conlon.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I think I'm hearing mutterings over here, too, that I was just doing some arithmetic in my head. That was the turnover about 20 to 25%, and 30% of that was termination, so that meant that you fired 6% of the staff?
Well,
I think the arithmetic is right. I could be wrong, but that just seems like a lot.
We did have a fairly high number of terminations at the Honor Farm this last year. They were all legitimate for violation of agency rules or employee inmate boundaries. Some of them have resulted in criminal prosecution for those staff inmate boundary issues, and it's been well reported in the press. So that piece shouldn't be too much of a surprise. But I do agree it's a high number within our agency for sure. And Mr. Shannon just updated that the actual number was 3 dismissals. Unit 5012 offender supplies, pages 214 and 215. No positions or exception requests. Standard budget of $639,578 is recommended for approval by the governor. Unit 5021 facility maintenance on pages 216 and 18. This is a maintenance function for the physical integrity of 32 buildings, totaling 205,433 square feet of building space and 1,008 acres of land. There are 5 maintenance positions attached to it. The standard budget ask recommended by the approval by the governor is $1,037,396. On pages 219 and 20 is Unit 5022, facility operations. No positions, no exception requests. Recommendation is to approve this $827,218 of standard budget as submitted. Administration Unit 5031 has 13 full-time positions attached to it. It's on pages 221 and 2. Standard budget, $2,288,352, recommended by the governor. Food service budget for the Honor Farm is on pages 223 and 4. There are 4 positions, no related exception requests. Governor's recommendation, approve $1,649,996 as submitted. Unit 5033, programming is on pages 225 and 229. Currently 8 full-time positions tied to this unit. Exception request in the amount of $149,577 was for the religious consultant position that we've already talked about. That would require, and the governor's recommendation, again, is for a new AWAC position and to move $42,118 in general funds from object code 0901 to 0110 to continue funding for the position.
Mr. Chair, is in
Representative Nicholas.
This particular position, is this one of the one could work less than 30 hours a week, or does this one
Mr.
work
Mr. Chairman
more?
And Representative Nicholas, this is the other part-time position, currently contracted for 20 hours. The resulting recommendation is to approve the programming budget at the Honor Farm in the total amount of $1,326,708, as shown on the bottom right of page 228, which would again add the AWAC position and bring the total number of authorized positions for this unit to 9. The exception personnel report related to this request is on pages 229. Again, I would just mention, Mr. Chairman, that regardless of whether we would be required to pay the additional amount for medical services, it's our belief that we would better manage these duties and control the duties that they do by having an AWAC position rather than a independent contractor. So we would still ask for the AWAC position, part-time position. We would potentially not be asking for any additional funding for the medical piece of that. Education Unit 5034 is on pages 230 and 31. 9 positions, no exception request. Standard budget, $1,398,893. Would ask for your agreement with the governor's recommendation for approval. The Honor Farm, as its name implies, is primarily an agriculture operation. The agriculture budget, Unit 5071, appears on pages 232 and 234. It's funded by internal funding and agriculture sales, so there's no general funds attached to this unit. The ag operations includes a bovine herd, the wild horse program, and forage crop production. This unit provides jobs for an average of 79 inmates assigned to the farm. You'll see the livestock inventory and valuation and the revenue projections for agriculture sales of roughly $800,000 to $900,000 on pages 232. There is an exception request on page 233 in the amount of $213,000. This is a one-time request for additional spending authority for the purchase of farm and shop equipment, specifically a truck, a loader, and a backhoe. Governor recommends approval of this one-time exception request as well as the standard budget as submitted. The resulting amended budget amount for approval as listed on the bottom of page 234 is $1,077,372, and we would ask for your concurrence.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Greer.
I just had a quick question, curiosity. With the gentling or whatever they do with the wild horses, I know that's a different term than breaking. Do you get compensated for that for the Department of Interior? I couldn't remember.
Mr. Chairman, we do. We're paid on a, well, we have a contract with BLM, and it's $4.50 per horse per day.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Couple questions. On the wild horses, as you've gentled them and then they're sold at auction, if I remember right. What are you finding? Are those horses going at auction? Is the price remaining steady? Is there still the interest, or is that market starting to get saturated?
Mr. Chairman, the sales or adoption rate, we don't consider it an auction, it's an adoption, varies. As the economy turns down and hay prices go up, it tends to dwindle off a little bit, but we have probably the best adoption rate of any of the training programs in the state. We've also been in operation longer than anybody else, so it's been a long-term success for BLM and for us. The minimum bid for adoption is $100 a horse. So if there's not a $100 bid on that horse, then that horse doesn't get adopted at that time and then goes on the internet for adoption.
What is the adoption rate?
I don't remember how many we had adopted out of how many last time. I can certainly find that out. And we generally issue a press report, so it's probably on our website, but we'll get that information for you. But I think it's about a third.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, and then on the replacement for the equipment, is it replacing equipment that's worn out, or what's the? Please explain the replacement a little bit more.
Mr. Chairman, it is requesting to replace existing equipment that is well past its useful date, and it's cheaper to purchase new than to repair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burns, and then there's some Senator Burns.
I think it was last year, the year before, the majority floor leader pushed a bill about for the Honor Farm to sell some land, and you were going to try to buy some land or locate some land somewhere else and use the proceeds to purchase that. And that's, I think, the last I heard of it.
Mr. Chairman, there's times when I wish that's the last I've heard of it as well. What we've done at this point is had the property appraised, and the State Building Commission has authorized moving forward with the partial or full sale of that property, contingent upon our ability to locate enough property to maintain operations at the current level. So we found a neighbor who was willing to sell some acreage, and that is under, I guess, under negotiation. We had to come up with some money to guarantee that we would carry forward, and we're currently in the process of paying for an assessment or appraisal of that property to determine whether the funding that we have available is enough to purchase or not. So it's, the sale was contingent upon on making the farm whole, and we're in the process of trying to do that through purchase of additional land adjacent to the farm. We looked surrounding area, the logistics of trying to manage farm operations in an area that's detached from the existing farm proved to be, well, not very feasible without relocating the entire farm operation. So that's where we're at the current time. We would anticipate sometime in the near future having that appraisal and knowing whether we move forward or not. But it's at the level of the State Land Board in regards to that proceeding. So it's in their hands at this time.
My understanding was that it was the whole thing was premised on the fact that this land that's proposed for sale belonged to the Honor Farm now, on the value of that for development as for urban or suburban development. So therefore, it supposedly was quite valuable.
Mr. Chairman, it is valuable, but it wasn't appraised at the commercial rate in terms of for sale. It's appraised at its current
agricultural value.
Yes. So, but at the same time, we're looking at replacing productive agricultural land with productive agricultural land. So that's what we're looking at in terms of the sale value in comparison to the appraised value. Everybody anticipates that sale value would be much greater than the appraised value, but we can't rely on that in order to pursue finding replacement property.
Well, I'm assuming that whoever the purchaser would be, it isn't because they have a big yen to farm the same land you've been farming.
No, it's the only place they can grow.
Right. So it's basically for urban growth, so I don't quite understand why it wouldn't be appraised at that value.
Mr. Chairman, that's an issue that I'd have to defer to the State Land Board.
All right. Thank you.
Senator Wasserberger.
I guess my question would be, so you have your enterprise fund, and that was $1.6 million, is that correct? And then you're asking for a loader, a backhoe, and a pickup. Why don't you use your enterprise fund to purchase those pieces of equipment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wasserberger, that's what we're asking for is the expenditure authority, the spending authority only.
Never mind.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Yeah, just real quick, Director Lampert, on the equipment. Since that's, do you have, what's the, is there, I'm assuming inmates operate the equipment, and do you have people there, for training? And then who maintains that?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Hastert, that equipment is maintained by the farm operation itself, which is we have, basically a vocational instructor that handles all the farm equipment shops and repair shops, and inmates are either trained or previously trained to do that maintenance. Inmates do operate most of the equipment. I will tell you that when we have a new piece of equipment, typically it's the staff operating it until it gets broken in, and the inmates get the older equipment. But we do have a number of employees, most of which are classed as vocational instructors that oversee the farm operation.
And they repair the equipment. Okay.
I think Representative Nicholas.
Yeah, I just have a question. Do you anticipate buying brand new equipment, or do you go out and look for some good used equipment, and how do you determine the best?
Mr. Chairman, that's a decision that the farm manager makes based on available equipment. At times they've taken in conjunction with local vendors, they have, I'm not sure what it's called, but it's like a lease buyback program with the, where they have new equipment that's sitting on the lot that they aren't selling and they want some money for it, and then they can purchase it on secondary or reclaim that at the end of the lease period because of the quality of our maintenance program, and then sell it on the used market or secondary market for more than they would get if they kept it on the lot, not selling it for an extended length of time. So.
How many acres are you farming?
1,008 at this time.
And that fund of $1.6 million, what's your average spend rate through that biennially?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I'm tracking the question.
Well, it's your enterprise fund. And you said you have $1.6 million, and I take it that's from the proceeds from the operations.
Correct.
And you put all those back into the operation over time, or you have restrictions on the expenditures of those funds?
Well, we have a current level of spending authority, and that total is about $1 million out of the projected revenue. And then any revenue over and above that goes back into that fund. But we're limited, I think, on expenditure authority right at $1 million right now.
Then a change of question. You've got a building over there behind the administration building. And it's the three-story one that had the toilets leaking in the walls and all that kind of stuff. Is that still there and just sitting there vacant? And
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nicholas, that has been abandoned completely. We've taken the equipment that was located in that building and relocated it. We built a new warehouse building. As you may recall from last biennium, that funding with money that was previously allocated for building an industries building, we reallocated that with the permission of the committee to build a warehouse. So a lot of that communications connectivity was relocated to the warehouse. So that building is currently vacant, standing vacant. Part of our long-term, I guess you'd say, plan is to knock that building down. And we would still need to build some additional space to accommodate things like medical that are displaced into various buildings on the site. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes the Division 5000 Honor Farm and moves us into the penitentiary, which is the state's highest custody facility. Again, it's located in Rawlins. Has a total bed capacity of 826 beds and a normal operating capacity of 720 due to single bed housing requirements tied to classification. The average daily population at WSP in calendar year 2015 was 689. The average daily cost per inmate per day, including the cost of medical, was $145.56 a day. There are 400 authorized employee positions at WSP, including two AWAC positions with 106 vacancies last reported. 91 of those vacancies are in the correctional security ranks. The facility had a turnover rate of 18.75 this last calendar year. WSP is the only facility that we're offering a recruiting and retention bonus for newly hired correctional officers. The bonus amount is $5,000 paid out over a three-year period. Since its inception, we've hired 26 correctional officers who are eligible for the bonus. Anecdotally, the WSP recruits have told us that it was an attractant for them to come to Wyoming and to work at WSP.
You said was or wasn't?
Was. Although the concept itself was not unanimously welcomed by existing staff who did not receive the bonus. As you are aware, we've historically had an issue maintaining full staffing at WSP. When the national economy is bad, we have better luck than when it's good. We compete with local law enforcement, the railroad, the mineral extraction industry, and the Sinclair refinery for many of the same employees. There's been a chronic shortage of housing that falls in a price range that our staff can afford. Not surprisingly, therefore, most of the turnover at WSP, in fact, almost 80% of the turnover, has been due to other employment offers, inability to find suitable single-family housing, and out-of-state recruits returning to their home states as the economy has improved. The facility has a vehicle fleet of 26 facility-owned and 25 leased vehicles. There are 16 cell phones assigned. The First Division 6000 budget unit is on page 238. I'm sorry, that's the overall. It reflects a total governor's recommended budget of $71,761,503 for this division. The first unit is offender management 6011 on pages 236 to 239. As you would expect to be true at a high custody facility, there's a large contingency of correctional security positions. So there are 295 security-related positions associated with this unit, with 89 correctional officer vacancies and then two others in the correctional officer ranks. We were able to identify a reduction of $100,000 to the standard budget for this unit, which is reflected in the governor's recommendation on page 236. There is a position reallocation request included in this unit. It's the second half of the net to zero move that reallocated an office specialist position from WSP to support the human resources office and central office. This results in a reduction in unit 6011 of one full-time position and $133,425. The final governor's recommended amount for approval in this unit, as shown at the bottom right of page 238, is $48,492,927. With the exception personnel report for the position reallocated appears on page 239. Are there any questions on that one?
Representative Conley.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And just in general, I should have asked this yesterday, but where do we see overtime payments?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Conley, you mean in terms of what facility?
No, Mr. Chair. In terms of looking at the budget sheet, so you told us that, for example, on page 238 with the 295 employees that there's 89 vacancies. So in my mind, that is that you need to have kind of mandatory overtime in some way in order to meet your safety requirements. So I'm curious, where do we see overtime? Or is it just part of the expenditures for salaries?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Conley, just to clarify, we're not in a position where we're requiring mandatory overtime at the PAN. The overtime there has been voluntary because staff, frankly, they like the overtime, although we do have some concerns that if you use too much overtime, you tend not to be as, you know, not as attentive as you might otherwise be. So we limit the amount of overtime they can use. With that said, the money for overtime is included in the 100 series. It's not separately set out in terms of, I mean, it's part of the, we track it, but it's, in terms of funding, it's shown as part of the salaries, I think, isn't it? Okay. Yeah, it is shown as part of salary money, but it's tracked separately as overtime. So there is a separate appropriation, if you will, within the 100 series salary money that is for overtime specifically.
Okay, thank you.
Let's see, where was I? Okay, thank you. pages 240 and 241 is unit 6012, offender supplies. There are no positions in this unit, no exception requests. The budget amount is $1,542,392. That's recommended for approval by the governor. Unit 6021, facility management, is on pages 242 to 244. This budget outlines a maintenance function for the physical integrity of the 15 buildings, totaling 364,062 square feet of building space on 960 acres of land. There are 19 maintenance positions attached to it. The standard budget ask recommended for approval by the governor is for $3,523,072, and we'd ask you to concur. I would like to mention that this unit has been budgetarily challenged. Although the mitigation costs so far for the ongoing elevation issues at WSP have been mostly absorbed by A&I Construction, who've been great to work with, by the way. WSP maintenance has incurred costs related to maintenance and staffing that's not easily absorbed. Specifically, we've had a chronic issue being able to fill our skilled trade maintenance positions, particularly at WSP. The pay we offer to skilled trades, such as licensed plumbers and licensed electricians, as well as our electronic specialists, is well below what they can make elsewhere. As a result, we've become somewhat of a happy hunting ground for others looking for skilled trades people. So when we do manage to hire someone, they usually don't stay for a long time. This has caused maintenance and deferred maintenance projects to become delayed. And when we can't afford to delay them any further, in risk of systems going down, we have to hire outside contractors to do the work that would otherwise get done by employees if we had those employees in the positions. That comes at a significant premium in costs. In addition to costing us more than having staff on hand to do the jobs, we have to expend 900 series contract dollars to pay for those services, and we're not able to shift 100 series vacancy dollars down to cover those additional costs, so it causes a shortfall in our budget. Therefore, we have to severely stretch the 900 series funding or come up with operational savings to cover those contract costs. And we find ourselves using operational dollars that might otherwise be used for better purposes. Although there's no budgetary fix, I felt it was important to highlight that. Again, if we did have Section 308 authority to move those $100 series dollars, that would help. But that, again, is a policy decision. On pages 245 and 6 is Unit 6022.
Mr. Speaker. Just to follow up on that, I mean, it's one thing to have, to me, carte blanche Section 308 ability to use Section 100. I'm more interested, well, if we can give you a limited amount of additional dollars in order to do this, do you have estimated proposals over the next biennium of what you may need over and above, to match or your needs in terms of outside contractor services for the building itself and for ongoing problems that you foresee? Or
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, we certainly have that dollar amount in terms of what we've expended in additional 900 series contracts for those maintenance functions and can provide that. You've already heard about the recruiting piece of that, and you've heard about this piece of that, which would be to pay for those maintenance, I guess, staff contract positions. And the third piece of that we'll get to when we talk more about the out-of-state, I guess, in terms of possible displacement. That would be the third area of operational concern that we would have to try to keep us from having to come back for general funds. So those are the three areas.
So, Mr. Chairman, the figure that I'd like to see is to maintain in the next biennium what you're going to need in order to do this, what you can't afford to do with your interior facility management folks, what reasonable number that is and what it's predicated on. So, and that's something obviously we're going to need between now and next week.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative Greer.
If I may follow up with Representative Nicholas's. Yeah, I'd like to know
how much
the type of employees, what were the unit those employees are located, and as the good chairman said, how much.
And Mr. Chairman, my fiscal staff have just told me that we're over expended $300,000 for maintenance reasons right now.
That's not the
for so far this biennium, and that's for those specific
Representative Greer,
purposes.
Go ahead and say that again.
Okay, I understand that, but I mean, if we're to consider flex authority, what I would like to see is that what unit are those employees located? What are their class codes? How many? Definition of their job description, and then how much money would be necessary for that flex authority?
Mr. Chairman, we can certainly provide that.
Representative Connolly.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. In your narrative, you say that there's 21 employees that are associated with the unit, but when we turn to the budget pages on 243 and 244, the base budget and standard budget shows a decrease of 2 from 21 to 19, and then that's carried over with the governor's rec.
And I apologize for that. That is the amended number. We had within the unit, we moved some positions, and do you remember what those two were? Mr. Shannon's telling me those were electrician positions. I'll have to retrack and see exactly what those were, but they are reflected elsewhere in another page of the budget document where we shifted those or reallocated that within the division, those positions.
Mr. Chair, does that take an exception request to do that?
Within the division, I don't believe it does.
Okay.
But they are tracked on in Chapter 17, right?
Yes.
They are tracked in Chapter 17 in the exception request. And I can certainly go to that page now if you want me to. Well, let me come back to it because I don't see it.
Yeah, we can
marked.
Come back.
The next section is facility operations, page 245 and 6. No positions, no exception requests. We were able to identify $30,000 that could be removed from the standard budget, so the resulting recommendation is for $2,224,538.
Mr. Chairman, what's that $30,000?
It's just money that we didn't expend that we identified could be, instead of just being reverted, actually be removed from our standard budget.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the administration unit, 6031, has 31 full-time positions, 2 AWACS, appears on pages 247, 251. As you'll see on page 247, we identified $20,000 in standard budget savings in this unit. Governor's recommendation is to approve the remaining standard budget as submitted. There's an exception request on page 248. As you heard discussed regarding our other facilities, we are seeking to convert our Native American religious consultant position, or we were seeking to convert what is currently an AWAC position for the Native American religious consultant to a full-time position, but the governor's recommendation is to retain that as an AWAC position. And there would be no need to shift funding because it already is in an AWAC, attached to an AWAC position. So
Mr.
we would ask for your concurrence.
Representative Nichols.
So this is, what weekly hours is this AWAC person working?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nicholas, this is a full-time, covers all five facilities.
So it's going from facility to facility. All right.
The food.
Senator Burns.
Help me out here. The salary is going to be $135,000 and change. That's so annually about $62,000, something like that. And then what are the other benefits?
There are none attached to this AWAC at the current time, but we would have to start paying medical under the
I'm looking on page 248.
That on page 248 reflects what it would have cost to convert it to a full-time position, not what we're currently.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, good. Okay.
Food service budget, page 252 and 3. We identified $25,000 in standard budget reduction. Governor's recommendation is to approve the remaining $4,964,886 standard budget. Unit 6033, programming is on page 254 and 8. Currently 25 full-time positions tied to the unit. There's an exception request, again, concerning the religious consultant position. Governor's recommendation is to instead authorize a new AWAC. This is a full-time position. And to move $103,402 in general funds between object codes to continue that funding. The result would be to approve a programming unit budget at WSP in the amount of $3,775,355, as shown in the bottom right of page 254, and would require, or 257, I'm sorry, and would require adding the AWAC position, bringing the total number of authorized positions for this unit to 26. Again, the exception personnel report related to this request is on page 258. WSP Education Unit 6034 is on pages 259 and 60. 10 positions tied to the unit, no exception requests. We identified $15,000 in standard budget reduction. Governor recommends accepting that reduction and approving the remaining $1,561,961 in standard budget as submitted. Prison industries at state penitentiaries include a print shop and a garment shop. The budget for that unit 6061 shown on pages 262 and 3. There are three staff positions tied to the unit, no exception request. Governor recommends to approve $460,125 standard budget. And that completes the prison industries and concludes Division 6000 if there's no additional questions. Mr. Mr. Chairman, I can go back and answer two questions that came up earlier. In regards to the number of horses offered for adoption and the number adopted, it was a 58% adoption rate. In terms of the gross revenue for the aquaculture operation, it was $100,039 for 2 years. Okay, Division 9000, which is the Wyoming Medium Correctional Institution in Torrington, begins on page 264. As its name implies, this is the agency's largest medium custody facility. It was specifically designed to serve as the primary intake and assessment center for male inmates. It's the primary education and treatment center for inmates identified as requiring the highest level of protective custody, mental health treatment, medical treatment, dental, substance abuse, life skills, cognitive, behavioral, and or other treatment services. It has a total capacity of 720 beds with a normal operating capacity of 669. The average inmate daily population in 2015 was 640. In addition to 352 general population beds, they have a number of specialty beds, including 72 residential substance abuse treatment beds, 64 residential sex offender treatment beds, 80 intake beds, 40 protective custody beds, 38 chronic mental health and isolation beds, 32 segregation beds, 20 male hospice geriatric beds, 10 male infirmary beds, and 14 hospice and high-risk OBGYN and mental health observation beds for females. Because of the number and nature of specialty beds, the average cost per inmate per day, including medical, is $149.05. There are a total of 348 full-time positions attached to the facility, with 51 vacancies at last count. 78% of the facility's employees live in Torrington or other Wyoming communities. Only 22% reside in Nebraska. The employee turnover at this facility is the lowest of any of the institutions, at about 15%. Facility has a vehicle fleet of 15 agency-owned, 21 leased vehicles, 17 cell phones assigned to the facility.
Mr. Chairman.
Director, typically how many female inmates do you have at the medium?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stubbs, it depends on need. Almost always we have at least two, and that would include the female who's in the last trimester of pregnancy and one, I guess you would say, support inmate. That's the minimum that we generally have any time that there's a pregnant female. We've had as many as 12, and that was during the period when beds at the Women's Center were full and we had temporarily displaced to a county jail, and then we were able to shift them to MCI temporarily until the beds returned or capacity returned. There's nine at WMCI, females, nine females at WMCI as of today. Mr. Chairman, the first division, 9,000 and 11, offender management's on pages 265 and 267. There are 238 correctional officer series employees and 44 correctional officer vacancies. There are no exception requests. Governor is recommending approval of standard budget in the amount of $35,612,007. Offender supplies, unit 9012 is on pages 268 and 9. There are no positions attached, no exception requests. Budget amount is $1,337,721. Unit 9021 on pages 270 and 271 is facility maintenance. This budget outlines maintenance function for the physical integrity of six buildings, encompassing a total of 336,161 square feet of building space and 120 acres. This requires 18 positions to complete. Governor recommends a standard budget of it's on page 271. 3,640,919. Unit 9022, facility operations, appears on pages 272 and 3. No positions attached to the unit and no exception requests. Standard budget is submitted of $3,189,686, which the governor recommends. Page 274 and 276 covers administration, which is unit 9031, 32 employees attached to this budget unit. As part of our budget review, we were able to identify $250,000 in standard budget reduction for this unit, which is reflected in the governor's recommendation. I may have mistyped. I have to look. 274. It's 250 on page 250. I'm sorry. Am I on the wrong budget? That's food service. It's on page 274 and 275. That amounts to $250,000 reduction.
So, Mr. Chairman, you have that listed under supplies. Can you, what specifically did you, I mean, your expenditures just weren't as high over the biennium, or?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nicholas, that's correct. And Mr. Chairman, that is also the same. We didn't spend at the level that we anticipated. So the budget reduction for administration was $250,000, resulting in $5,148,147 standard budget. Food service, pages 277 and 8, that reduction is $350,000. Resulting budget, bottom page 178, is $3,670,352. Next up is unit 9033, programming, pages 279 to 283. There are 33 positions attached to the unit. Standard budget as submitted is $5,195,347, which, again, the governor recommends be approved. There was an exception request for this unit. It's the same as the ones you've seen before regarding the religious consultant position. Governor's recommendation is to add a new AWAC position because this is a full-time position. Move $120,000 in general funds from object code 0901 to object code 0110. To allow for continued funding of the position. And the exception personnel report for this request is on pages 283. Unit 9034 on pages 284 and 5 is education, 10 staff positions funded by the unit, standard budget amount of $1,628,999 as submitted is recommended by the governor. Unit 9054, which is the funding for the transition unit at WMCI, is on pages 286 and 7. Just by way of explanation, when this facility was first built, we designed in a 64-bed housing unit to serve for short-term residential transition unit for probation and parole violators who were coming back on a technical violation due to substance abuse. Because of population demands, we were never able to get the unit operational as it was intended. We returned some money last biennium. This would return the remainder of that money for that program that's not existent because of lack of bed space. however, again, this is a topic of discussion for the joint judiciary in terms of that $5.5 million projected impact or investment. It would incorporate the additional 70 beds that Representative Conley asked about, expanded capacity for treatment space related to substance abuse technical violators. As a result of the demands for a reduction to tobacco settlement dollars, we recommended to the governor that the additional $486,785 needed in the standard budget tobacco dollar reduction come from this unit. The result would be to zero out funding for Unit 9054, and that is reflected on the bottom of page 287. Is there any questions about that? Okay. Before I move to the next section, again, just to remind the committee that the Joint Judiciary has been doing interim work, and this is one of those things that they've looked at is the possibility of having short-term treatment beds for substance abuse technical violators. That's part of the committee's sponsored legislation. We would no longer have the tobacco dollars to support that program, so it would have to be general funds. The next budget unit for your consideration is pages 288 and 9. Unit 9061 is the prison industries at the Medium Correctional Center. We have a sewing shop, a janitorial supply shop, a braille transcription service, and a business support office at WMCI. Five full-time positions attached to the unit. Standard budget as submitted is $788,029. That's what the governor recommends be approved. And that concludes Division 9000.
Mr. Chairman? By braille transcribing, you're taking taking books and transcribing them into braille?
Mr. Chairman, books and music, what else are we doing? Religious materials as well.
So do we have specialized machines that do that?
We have trained inmates that do that. They have some specialized programming and but they have to be certified by the
Braille Police.
It's the National Association for the Blind or something like that. And a lot of our contracts are for like. We've transcribed school books for a blind student in Wyoming, for example.
I'm just kind of curious how it works. They have the book there, and so they're typing, and they have a specialized machine that, you know, they hit A, it hits the braille letter for A.
Mr. Chairman, in all honesty, I haven't watched it, but I know that they have some computer programmings that assist them in the process, but it takes their skilled, I guess, knowledge of Braille in order to ensure that transcription is accurate. They are certified by the National Association of the Blind or whatever the name of the firm is or the association is. They do work for the Library of Congress as well as in-state stuff. I guess I would encourage you to come to WMCI and we'll give you a tour and you can watch.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Do they and they transcribe it and then they certify it or whatever, you know, they do that by sight?
Yes, I mean that's how they verify the
right.
Work.
They verify it by sight.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes Division 9000. Okay. We do have some CAPCON requests.
Yeah.
The Department of Corrections CAPCON request starts on page 111 of the FY17-18 biennial capital construction budget request document.
Give us just a second to transition over to CAPCON. It'll be in the CAPCON.
What number?
Book.
Yeah.
Be in the front of your file cabinet. That doesn't. Is that with Agency 6?
No, it's own separate.
It's own separate.
And
so
I
on SharePoint.
It's filed in your top drawers here, and on SharePoint, it's just going to be called Capital Construction.
CAPCON.
There you go.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, page 111. All right, Mr. Chairman. As you'll see summarized on page 111, our Capcom budget request, we had a total of four requests. Total ask amount was $46,716,179. The first Capcom request is outlined on pages 112 and 114. This is a request for the legislature to consider funding completion of the build-out of 144 additional beds at the Torrington facility at a cost of about $94,000 per bed. As you may recall, when we constructed WMCI, we shelled in two additional 72-bed housing units but did not finish them out. We believed at the time that we constructed that facility, we would ultimately need those additional housing beds if Wyoming's population continued to grow and if there weren't any dramatic changes in public policy related to incarceration. As you can see, the estimated cost to complete those 144 beds is $13.5 million. That does include some contingency funding. The State Building Commission has recommended the project. The governor is also recommending that the funding be given to DOC to complete the construction at WMCI, but recommends using other funds rather than general funds to do so. The question you probably have is, are these beds really necessary at this time, especially after this morning's discussion? Or will they become necessary in the course of FY17-18 biennium? My answer to that question is, it depends. If all the beds at WSP and Rollins remain available for housing inmates, or if we have the additional out-of-facility funding approved to pay for rental beds during any displacement from there, we can most likely house our current and projected inmate population in Wyoming in the beds we are currently paying for up through the end of calendar year 2019. Meanwhile, if the legislature approves the expansion and funding of alternatives to incarceration that impact the current rate of incarceration in the state in a positive way and reduces the projected prison growth rate in the state, the need for additional prison beds might be pushed further into the future. So again, the legislation that's being presented as a committee-sponsored legislation this session, if it has the impact we intend, then it could take some pressure off these need for these beds. As for this $13.5 million Capcom request, the anticipated construction window to complete the beds at WMCI and bring them online is 12 to 15 months. That means if approval is given with funding available upon signature, we could have those beds in operation at the beginning of FY18, reducing the potential need for additional out-of-facility housing due to issues at WSP by 144 beds, or roughly $6 million per year, which is what it would cost to send them out of state. If funding for expansion at WMCI is denied, and if all the beds at WSP remain online without any disruption, it appears we could make do with the beds we already have available to us throughout the next biennium. However, that's a lot of ifs. We would, of course, live with whatever decision you make, and if the population projections or conditions at WSP changed and it became necessary to build the additional beds at WMCI sooner rather than later, we could come back in the supplemental session or in the FY19-20 biennium request the funding for that construction. Delaying construction at WMCI does have a risk in that it will likely cost more to construct those beds in one or more years than it would in today's dollars. It would also require that if inmates are displaced from WSP prior to completion of that construction, they could not be absorbed in in-state prison beds. However, the risk would be reduced somewhat if the legislature adopts the recommendations of the Joint Judiciary Committee in the committee-sponsored legislation regarding the expansion of alternatives to incarceration. We've seen through our own experience with the expansion of the existing prison units and the construction at WMCI that if we build additional prison beds, the desire to find less costly alternatives to incarceration that still hold offenders accountable and improve public safety is less immediate. In turn, those new prison beds get filled more quickly. In other words, if we build an additional 144 beds at Torrington in anticipation of expected demand now and don't take steps to reduce the rate of incarceration in the state, then we could anticipate a need to fund the operation of those beds from now on out. It currently costs $149.05 per day, per bed per day at WMCI. If there was no economy of scale, that means that to add 144 additional beds would cost $15.6 million more per biennium to operate those beds. The actual additional cost of operation would be more likely in the neighborhood of $6 million per year, which is incidentally about the same as it would cost to house them out of state. Included in those estimates are an additional 18 correctional officers, 3 sergeants, 2 corporals, 4 caseworkers, 1 recreation specialist, and 1 support staff. It would take to fully staff and support 2 additional housing units. Some of those positions would be reallocations of vacancies within the agencies, particularly if WSP requires partial closure. Like I said, the SBC and the governor have recommended moving forward with this project in this budget. Their decision is based on the limited information we have available. If it becomes necessary to eventually move out of the existing buildings at WSP, having 144 beds already constructed and waiting to handle some of that displacement would be a good thing operationally and economically as well. In short, we need a policy decision regarding whether to proceed with funding and construction at WMCI at this time or to wait. And we'll eagerly await your decision. Are there any questions regarding this $13.5 million CAPCON request?
Mr. Chairman and Director Lampert, in flashing back a little bit to the discussion yesterday at the Building Commission, but can you discuss a little bit? I know there's a number of prisoners at the state penitentiary that would not be eligible to move over to Torrington. And can you talk to us a little bit about what those numbers look like?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'll get back into those numbers here again in a minute, but basically there's 150 segregation or high custody beds that are in use, and those inmates could not be absorbed at WMCI or any other in-state facility. So if we used a phased approach to addressing any issues at WSP and assuming that any displacement of that would be a year or less. Then the most that we would have displaced under a partial approach, I guess, would be 150 high custody inmates at $85 a day.
And Mr. Chairman, I'm jumping a little bit ahead on our discussion, but as we're looking at timing of remedies to the state prison and how that fits in with use of the of Torrington, I mean, in my mind, as I think through this, if we had to buy ourselves some time, and you did that phase approach that I know you'll talk about a little bit further, I mean, if you're going to have to move those 155 folks out of state anyway, it seems like maybe that could buy us some time, which would still allow us to have those beds ready to move folks over that would be eligible to move. I just want to make sure my thinking is accurate.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Stubson, if we used a phased approach, and had to displace inmates, it would displace 2 units at a time. So that's 164 beds, or 168 beds. That's the minimum number of beds that would go offline at a time. If we had the beds at Torrington available at the same time that we had 150 inmates out of state, then potentially we could displace 300, do twice the work, and only cost us out of state of 150. So in terms of timing, if we wanted to have beds at WMCI to fall on, those 144 beds, we would need to proceed now to have them online at the beginning of the next fiscal year 18, which would be probably about the time that the construction window would start. So it would be good timing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Conley.
Mr. Chair, I guess this might be a question for Kevin. The governor says that he doesn't concur with the State Building Commission, but recommends 13.5 in other funds. What are those other funds?
Mr. Chairman, I can answer
that. Go ahead, Mr. Chairman. Permanent land funds, it's on page 114. It would be penitentiary permanent land funding, I believe.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Could you explain what that is?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'll give the director an opportunity to answer that and fill in where necessary.
Mr. Chairman, in terms of the Penitentiary Permanent Land Fund, I frankly don't know what that is.
Don, why don't you help us out? It's an active omission.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely right. Active omission funds for Penitentiary Permanent Land Fund that can be used for only purposes of building penal institutions.
Now, is this now there's two parts to this. There's a permanent fund. There's an income fund with it. Is there, or is this?
Mr. Chairman, not in this instance.
Oh, there isn't. So tell us the
this
balance
one is
of that
not,
fund.
This one is not that kind of it's not similar to what we've discussed in other,
right,
like the mining hospital or the omnibus.
So how much is in that?
This has just almost $22 million.
And what's the growth rate on that? I mean,
Mr. Chairman, nominal. It's going to be as invested state, the way all the state funds are invested, just like 2-3% a year.
Mm-hmm. But that's the only fund. I mean, that's the corpus.
Mr. Chairman, that's true.
We have appropriated that in the past. It's been a long time, 10 years probably, that we've.
Mr. Chairman, that is also true.
Oh, okay, we'll have to get a little more history on that, kind of. Okay. Let me, sir, I know Representative Burkhardt has a question too, but is it possible to, I mean, you got the two pods there in Torrington, to do one of those and, I don't know, some other options. And with that, I guess my question is, we know about the vacancies in Rawlins. I mean, you have a tough time. Is it, what's the story in Torrington? I mean, is it easier to find a workforce? Now we're going to add to the workforce?
Mr. Chairman, it has been easier to recruit at Torrington. Currently, there's 40 vacancies there compared to 120 at the Penn. The housing isn't as great of an issue in Torrington as it is in Rawlins, for example. So we just, and it's the overall environment of the penal institution itself is different. It's a treatment-oriented facility. That's their primary purpose. So it's the center of quality or, yeah, center of excellence for all of our treatment programs and medical services. So the staff there have more intrinsic reward, I guess you would say, on a day-to-day basis than they do working at the penitentiaries, which leads to the turnover rate. Again, the turnover rate at this particular facility is 15% compared to, you know, up to 26% at other facilities.
So many of these, according to risk, I guess, inmates in Rawlins could be housed if we had the opportunity to, if we had increased capacity, would have been sentenced to the medium security anyway if we had those 144. How many folks, if we had medium security beds available, would qualify to leave the Rawlins facility?
Mr. Chairman, medium custody 464, and we have an additional 34. Or 74 minimum. So, you know, that would be 500 inmates that could be displaced to medium custody beds. The remainder are all the high custody people that can't be displaced.
And that's 150.
Well, 160 is the actual amount, but 150
so,
is
So, I mean, obviously, constitutionally, we're going to have a penitentiary in Rawlins. I mean, it's nobody's, but I think, you know, this whole issue of workforce is a huge deal. I don't know if we've had, probably not a fair question. I mean, how we locate these, and I mean, it's a reason we didn't put the medium security in Rawlins. We could have never staffed it, I'm sure. But anyway, I don't know where I'm going with it. I do, but I don't want to go there anymore. I think Representative Burkhardt's next.
Mr. Chairman, Don answered my question, the amount of money in that land fund. So,
okay.
You.
Go ahead, Representative Moniz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What's the revenue source for the permanent land fund?
The permanent prison fund?
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, Don.
Mr. Chairman,
Thanks for the opportunity. I wanted to correct one thing about the interest. It does not go into this account. The interest earned on these permanent land funds, one quarter of it goes to the general fund, and no, three quarters goes to the general fund, and one quarter of income goes to the omnibus permanent land fund. So this fund just remains pretty static. And to get to Mr. Chairman, Representative Moniz's question, it was funds that were awarded through the act of admission when Wyoming became a state. I have some notes on that. It's just that there was a deposit from lands, mineral royalties, and any money designated by the Wyoming Constitution or Wyoming statute. So that's money that's been in this account for a long time.
How much is it?
It's $21.7 million.
So this is really the corpus. I mean, this is it. So as you spend it down, it really can't refill?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's correct.
And so, and all these diversions of the income off of that are statutory creations, I'm sure.
Uh-huh. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
So the $22 million, Mr. Chairman, is the corpus. And all interest then flows three-fourths into the general fund and the other quarter into where?
I'm sorry, into the omnibus Mr. Chairman, omnibus permanent land fund.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Burkhardt.
Mr. Chairman, I think that it's the interest that has to be divided, as LSO indicated. And I think the earnings, though, from grazing leases and that go into that fund. I think it's the interest that gets divvied up.
Nod. So we're going to need to learn more about what those lease payments, the earnings off of.
I mean, Mr. Chairman, a quick overview for the last fiscal years in the state treasurer's report. And they're saying oil and gas royalties, $1.4 million, right-of-way easement, they had a negative on some easements, but surface damage at $458,000.
And these are on the penitentiary.
Yeah. And then there's an inflation-proofing income diversion Wyoming statute 94305B, a white paper one page
what
would be
was
better.
The revenue then, you just quick look last year was 1.7, you said?
Oh, looks like 1.8 somewhere in
so
there.
So that's that's really the income fund, that's $22 million. It's really, that's what we think. Okay, we're going to learn more about it. Okay. Senator Burns.
Just little institutional memory. When the Torrington was chosen, for those who weren't here at the time, when the state decided to build the medium security prison, the three communities that were vying for it were Torrington, Riverton, and Rollins.
Yeah.
And Rollins was eliminated actually pretty early because of the manpower problem, the employee problem and housings and so forth. So it came down between Torrington and Riverton, and I can't remember why. I remember I came out for Torrington, but I can't remember why.
Yeah, I vaguely remember myself. That's been, what was that, probably 04 or 05? Okay.
Mr.
Representative
Chairman,
Burkhardt has a question.
I like living in Rollins, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hastert.
Mr. Chairman, you had alluded, Director, more than alluded, but either we need to build some of these facilities, look at some of this, or get some meaningful policy changes for some, incarceration type of things, and is Joint Judiciary working on, or do they have legislation prepared that provides that for you, or is this still something that is a little bit further out there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hastert, they do have committee-sponsored legislation that will address some of these issues, not all of them, but some.
Mr. Chairman, I think what I know that I guess I'm one that have, and I know many as others have thought about, you know, you look at the cost of incarceration per day and the numbers that you gave us, and you know, and then the need for, you know, nonviolent offenders. Do they really need, you know, and the discussion around, do they really need, you know, the prison time? And has there been more studies? Is there something that we can or I can look at that looks at some of that and what can be done, you know, instead of incarceration for nonviolent, you know, like someone with a small amount of, and I don't know what the amount would be, you know, like for drug types of, and, you know, different things like that, offenses.
Mr. Chairman, in terms of what's currently proposed, would allow for, I guess, displacement of, or potential displacement of about 220 people who would otherwise come to prison to other alternatives, which would eliminate the projected growth between now and 2020. So it would definitely handle the projected growth rate in terms of, and that's if all other public policies remain the same. In terms of other options, a number of states have taken a full approach to justice reinvestment and had some nationally recognized experts come in and fully analyze the data and give full recommendations on public policy. We didn't go to that level at this time. We took a snapshot of what we had. We did involve the National Governors Association and Council of State Governments in doing some along with Pew, some look at what our data suggested, and that's the package that's moving forward with the Joint Judiciary at this time. Further impacts would probably take additional work and may lead us down the path of, if the President of the Senate and Speaker of the House and the Governor's Office and the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court all agreed to have the Bureau of Justice come in and do that full analysis, we could do that, but that would take their recommendation and their support.
Okay, so question then, not just one more thing for the Rawlins facility. So let's say the worst case scenario in these parts that are affected by the subside, whatever, the movement. How many good beds do you have there? I mean, if you just said, okay, we're going to scuttle this part, how much room do you have? Do you have enough room for the high risk folks?
Mr. Chairman, if I could defer that to, for just a minute, when we get to the next CAPCON request on pages 115 to 118, it specifically deals with WSP.
Okay.
And I could overview the study and kind of
sure
try to answer your question.
All right, let's keep moving then.
Okay. The next CAPCON request is on page 115 and 118. It's a $25 million placeholder for a cost of stabilization at WSP. The State Building Commission recommended approval. Governor recommends denial. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, we've experienced some elevation changes in numerous areas throughout the buildings that are actively used for inmate housing and operations at WSP. It was noted that extensive cracking of structural and non-structural masonry walls is occurring within the south facility, but the extent and severity of the damage varies depending on the location within the building. WSP staff reports that wall cracking is ongoing and that other damage, including cracking of glass windows, racking and binding of doors, and movement and cracking of floor slabs continues to be prevalent in certain areas of the facility. Movement and cracking of masonry walls and floor slabs is also occurring within the CPF and CABE unit buildings. WSP staff reports that this movement is continuing as well. Much of the cracking and damage is occurring at masonry walls that are directly supported on concrete slabs on grade or at locations where slabs supported masonry walls attached to masonry walls that are supported on deep foundations. Just by way of explanation, there's grade beams throughout that facility, about three miles worth of grade beams, and primarily the structural walls set on those grade beams. And in between is a slab that was poured on grade. It's not structural in nature. It floats with the ground. So as the ground has moved, the slab has moved, and the walls attached to that slab have moved, those walls aren't attached to the structural slab, so there's some cracking at those joints. In response to those concerns, we worked with Capital Construction Division of A&I to have forensic engineering testing done at the facility. Expansive soils were known to exist at WSP site at the time of design and construction of the facility. Provisions were made in the original foundation design to accommodate that movement, including supporting the structural walls of the building on deep drilled pier foundations and concrete grade beams. Void spaces were specified to be installed below the concrete grade beams to allow the expansive soils to move upward without impacting the performance of the foundation. Forensic testing has shown, however, that mud slabs were installed directly beneath the grade beams rather than underlying the void spaces, negating the benefit of the void spaces. Improper isolation of interior non-structural slabs on grade form foundations was also noted. No structurally significant cracking of the concrete grade beams or separation of the drilled pier from the foundation wall has been observed, meaning grade beams are intact, but there is still a potential for additional movement. 9 test borings were taken at various locations. It was determined there are compressive soil conditions under the CPF and K unit and expansive soil conditions under most of the south facility. Both indicate that additional control of runoff water, snow accumulation, and integrity of water, sewer, and drain lines is critical. Testing and forensics indicate the primary cause of the distress, which is occurring at the WSP, is differential vertical movement of the concrete slabs on grade, and to a lesser extent, vertical movement of foundation elements. At the south facility, most of the damaging building movement is being caused by heaving of expansive soil below the buildings. Forensic testing indicates that properly designed and structurally and constructed structural ground level floors would have greatly reduced or eliminated the damage from floor slab movement. At the CPF and K buildings, most of the damaging building movement is being caused by the settlement of fill and native overburdened soils below the buildings. Grading and drainage is minimal to poor around the south facility, CPF, and K unit buildings. This is contributing to increased moisture contents of the subsoils under those buildings. Our original placeholder estimate is to address these issues and provide us with a stable facility that will keep the facility on inventory for multiple years was $25 million, which is, again, the request you have in front of you. I don't have the amended number available for you at this time, but I do anticipate it would be higher. This was a topic of discussion yesterday at the State Building Commission, as Representative Stupson can attest. And I'm sure that they're equally frustrated that we don't have more information or final figures to guide in the discussion. In short, Mr. Chairman, you have in front of you a CapCon exception request for a placeholder of $25 million that was recommended for approval by the SBC, denied by the governor. Questions remain on how much it will actually cost to permanently fix the issues, how long it would take to do so, how many inmates might be displaced during the mitigation or reconstruction process, and how long we can delay the process. As more information is received, it will be provided to the State Building Commission and members of the legislative leadership. I will tell you that in our discussion of contingency planning, our preference would be to look at the final costs as they come in, to look at areas of the building that may cost less to mitigate the damage. Particularly, it appears or makes sense that it would cost less to mitigate damage of the CPF and K buildings where the soil is settling, to insert some compaction grouting as was described to the State Building Commission yesterday, and salvage the production facility, the K unit housing, as well as to look at the next step would be to salvage that high custody portion of the facility, those 150 beds, which would be the most expensive to replicate. At that time, then we could look at the remaining 6 housing units, determine what that cost of mitigation would be in comparison to potential replacement, and take the most economical and sound approach that we could. President Nicholas asked us yesterday to develop to provide to the leadership and to this committee and to the Joint Judiciary contingency plan or overview of the possible contingency plan and potential costs. Certainly we will do that, but we don't have the cost of mitigation yet. So part of that will be delayed, but we'll do our best to have that available at the beginning of the session.
Mr. Co-Chair.
I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but who is the contractor on this thing? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, that history was covered at the State Building Commission yesterday. I don't believe they mentioned who the contractor was.
Was there any discussion as to right of recourse?
Mr. Chairman, that was purposely deferred.
The AG's office.
AG's looking at it.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Probably be an executive session anyway.
Okay. Senator Burns.
We're having this on the coming after what happened to the North Unit and subsidence there also. So is this a localized issue just in that particular area? Or and I'll ask Representative Burkhardt, is this a problem they have all over Rollins? Is it just the nature of that area?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Representative Burkhardt.
Yeah, the soil is a problem all over Rollins. Some of it's sandy, some of it's clay. Where the penitentiary sits is out on a flat that is probably a fair amount of bentonite in it. So, yeah, it occurs in town. I mean, there are some houses I've seen that have differences in their basement of almost a foot where things have settled or moved. So
from what I've heard, I thought at the time after what happened with the North Unit that the South Unit was built up on the bench and it was supposed to be more stable soil up there.
Mr. Chairman, just by way of history, my understanding of the North facility, which was before my time, but it was built on spread footings. On a dry lake bed, basically, where the water table level was fairly low. And because of the alkaline nature of the soil, along with some faulty construction, the facility basically fell apart. So in looking to replace some of those beds and expand capacity at the North facility, the original design for the South facility up on the I don't know what to call it, the ridge or the base, mesa or whatever you want to call it, was for 400 beds. And that would be the high custody end of the house. And then the North facility would keep operating as the general population facility. But because of the damage and a number of other issues, there was a court case and a settlement that resulted in the closure of the North facility and expansion of the South facility. When the South facility was designed, the people look at the soil conditions. I can't think of their name right now, but the engineering firm that did that made very specific recommendations to use a drilled peered construction with footings at least 24 foot into the underlying bedrock, understanding that the bedrock under that facility is claystone, and if it gets wet, it swells. That bedrock ranges from 4 foot under the facility at the minimum depth to, I don't know what the maximum depth is, but probably about 16 feet under. So that's the differential in swelling that we're seeing. They also recognized when they built the CPF facility that was on more sandy soil, more compressive soil, and designed it accordingly. The question appears to be that it wasn't built to design. And there's also a question in terms of the recommendation in the original design was that the floor slabs be structural in nature. In other words, that there be a void form under them and that they be anchored below, and they weren't. They were put on grade. So as the soil has gotten wet and swollen, those slabs have changed position and not at the same rate as the structural portions of the building. So that's caused the displacement and cracking. Whether that's whose fault that is, whether it's chargeable or not, the fact remains is that there appears that it wasn't built specifically to design.
Would you mind a visit on one of the weekends during the session from myself and maybe a couple of other legislators?
Anytime.
Come out and look at this in Rollins.
Mr. Chairman, any member of the legislature is welcome at any time.
Thank you. Can we then leave?
Mr. Chairman, that's another question.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Representative Stupson.
Mr. Chairman and Director Lampert, maybe just I want you to talk about when the engineering firm was talking to the building commission yesterday, they made a couple of points that I thought were pretty important for this panel as far as figuring out the path forward. One being that there's no life safety security concern right now, that you've been able to handle that. And then I think they, as I recall, they said that really you could probably at the outside make it, you know, 5 years or so before those sorts of concerns percolate to the surface. And so, I mean, is that the way you understood their report as well? Because what I don't want people here to come away with is that we've got to come up right now and rush into some solution, even when we don't know the costs and that sort of thing. Anyway, if you could speak to that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Stupson, he's exactly correct in regards to the testimony of the forensic engineering firm and their representative, Mr. Lund, yesterday. There are no current safety or structural concerns that mean that we would have to move inmates tomorrow. However, movement has continued. We've been tracking it for a number of years now, and it's continued, and although it's been about 3/4 inch additional displacement during the time frame that we've been monitoring it, which is quite a bit when you're talking of 360,000 square feet of building. It has caused cracking, and it's caused pieces of masonry to drop. Fortunately, most of those areas where that displacement is occurring is in secure areas where there's no inmates, but our maintenance staff are exposed to those areas when they do their routine maintenance. So there is some safety issues if they happen to be in there and they're not wearing a hard hat. So we've encouraged them and authorized them to wear hard hats when they're in those areas. The separation of the walls, like I said, a 3/4 inch gap does create some security concerns in terms of the ability to hide contraband, for example. There's been some issues relative to life safety in terms of the racking of doors and inability to open certain doors. We have a plan in place to address those issues that would help us maximize the length of time that we can use the current facility without costly mitigation. Mr. Lund did say that on the outside that if we didn't take any action, we might be able to get 5 years of additional service out of the building before we had to abandon it in effect because of structural issues. But he also said that, you know, we should be working to mitigate those issues as quickly as we can because there is continued movement. So can we get by? Yes. For how long? That's an unknown because there is continued movement. There could potentially be some increased life safety issues as the building continues to move, and we have to plan for those and mitigate them when we can. Would I recommend waiting 5 years before we do anything? I would not, because at that point we would be in a panic situation trying to figure out what to do with 700 inmates and the staff displaced when we could have potentially taken steps to mitigate that and maximize the retention of existing prison beds and plan for replacement of any that ultimately need replaced. So Representative Stupson is correct. On the outside, we could delay doing anything for 5 years, but the risk is, or up to 5 years, but the risk is that we would be forced into a situation where we would have to abandon the facility like we had to abandon South Facility. And my preference and our preference would be to come up with a plan to address the issues and maintain operation of that facility, understanding that if we aren't able to maintain all areas of the facility in a cost-effective manner, we would do our best to salvage CPFK and those high-custody, high-cost beds, and then look at what's the cost options for the remainder beds. Those 150 beds are going to continue to be needed for this, for the agency's need. We have that level of need for those highest custody beds. Certainly the general population and the other 500 inmates, we can look and work on a detailed approach that would allow for either temporary displacement in existing beds. As we looked at contingency plans, we came up with some temporary beds that we would be able to use to avoid displacement. But again, those 150 high custody, we don't have any place in state that we can put them during a period of time that piece of the building might have to be mitigated. So that could be up to a year. So again, yesterday I talked about the potential out of facility costs that would result, and depending on what the dollar amounts are and what the plan is in terms of the policy decision in regards to when the time does come to mitigate or reconstruct, to whether to do it all at once or in pieces. Certainly our preference would be to do it in pieces and maintain the integrity of the institution, integrity of staffing, and keep as many inmates in state as we could for the longest period of time, because we do a better job than other people do.
Mr. Chairman, I might have missed this, but so they're still just working on a mitigation plan. I mean, has there been a comment or part of the report, will mitigation work, will it be effective? I don't know if that's been determined.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Greer, and President Nicholas asked this question yesterday in terms of what is the potential lifespan of the building if the mitigation occurs. I can tell you that in my experience, when you design a prison facility, at the short term, you design it to last 30 years, and in reality, you design it to last a minimum of 50 years. This was a lease build buyback kind of approach, I believe, to the construction of the South facility, where it was bonded, and that bond was through somebody else that owned the building, and we then elected early in my tenure to pay off those bonds and gain ownership of this building. I'm sorry, I lost track of my thought. Can you repeat your question? I'm sorry.
My question was, will the mitigation be effective? I think along those terms, how long will it extend the expected life of the building?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Lund indicated yesterday that if we take these steps to mitigate, as outlined in their recommendations, he would anticipate another 30 years or more service of the building. Okay, Mr. Chairman, moving on to the next CapCon request, pages 119 to 122. It's the amount of $929,947 to address flooring issues at the Honor Camp, the Women's Center, and WMCI. We've seen dramatic failure in the existing epoxy and flooring systems in the kitchen and shower areas of these facilities. That's allowing water to infiltrate under the flooring systems, which is a life safety concern. This funding would allow for the existing flooring system to be replaced with a urethane antimicrobial system. The SBC has made no decision. But the governor is recommending the project be approved, but using other funds rather than general funds. Given that this is a life safety issue, we would ask for your approval. Mr. Chairman, the final CapCon request is on page 123 and 127 of the capital construction budget document. I'd like to explain a little bit more about it. In response to the governor's state energy plan, we took a comprehensive look at energy usage in our agency. With the assistance of the state energy office, we used the authority of the Wyoming Energy Conservation Improvement Program, or WICEP, to perform investment-grade energy audits at all five of our institutions, our central office, and the Training Academy in Rawlins. In October of 2014, we entered into a contract with Energy Systems Group to perform these comprehensive audits with a cost of $195,818 for those audits. Under the YSEP program, the energy and water conservation projects identified within the investment grade audit are designed to save the agency a set amount of energy savings over time that will pay for themselves as well as the cost of the audit. So in effect, we identified projects that would result in a cost savings of over $1.7 million per year in guaranteed energy savings. Those projects in total would cost about $28 million with a simple payback period of 16 and a half years. Wyoming Statute 912-1201 and 1203 appear to allow for third-party financing of the work to be completed following an investment-grade energy audit and for the resulting energy savings to then be used to pay the cost of the audit and resulting construction. Under the YSEP, if those savings weren't realized, then the energy audit firm would be on the hook for the difference, which is one reason we decided to have the audits done in the first place. However, upon the AG's review, it was determined that our state constitution does not permit individual state agencies to take on debt without specific authorization from the legislature to do so, and without having the energy audit firm under continued contract as contemplated, we'll lose the ongoing benefit of guaranteed energy savings. When we realized that third-party financing was not an option for us because of we are a state agency, we tried to determine if the projects would qualify for major maintenance funding. It was determined that they did not, and that we would have to seek capital construction funding in order to proceed. As a result, we prioritized the projects and came up with $7,286,232 of the $28 million in total energy conservation projects that would have the biggest impact, and we put them in the form of this CapCon request. The State Building Commission and the Governor recognized the importance of energy conservation and the need to reduce energy expenses within the agency, but have recommended denial of the CapCon request. The Governor has encouraged us to look for options to move those energy conservation savings projects forward in a way that does not have an immediate impact on general funds. The only other solution I could come up with was to move these important energy savings projects forward would be to have the legislature specifically authorize the agency to seek third-party financing of these projects through the passage of an independent funding authorization bill, but certainly would be open to other solutions as well. In short, based on the statutory enabling language of the Wyoming Energy Conservation Improvement Program, DOC had investment-grade energy audits completed. We cannot move forward with any of those projects without the funding necessary to do so and have to pay the firm that completed the audits $195,818 out of our operational dollars for the work that they've already done. So that again explains why some of that money that potentially could be returned to the budget we need to reserve. Without some funding source or direct legislative authorization to seek third-party financing, such as through a bond, the energy audit results will basically have to go on a shelf, and we will not realize the $1.7 million a year in energy savings that would otherwise accrue if we were able to complete the identified projects. Are there any questions about that CapCon request?
Representative Conley.
Just a couple questions. I'm curious about the prioritization for the $7.2 million. It looks to me like you've given us the total cost of the projects. And can you give us what the priority projects are?
Mr. Chairman, I do have that information and would be willing to provide it in more detail. The bottom line was that the payback period for those projects identified at WMCI and the Women's Center was the shortest and would have the biggest impact on energy savings. So they were put at the top of the list.
Okay. Great. Thank you. And then actually this is probably a question for Dawn. Dawn, I'm curious about that State Penitentiary Land Fund, if it could be used for something like this, or is it only construction of penal institutions?
Mr. Chairman, the use of those funds is not applicable to general operating expenses. They would have to be for facilities, permanent, real property. And, Mr. Chairman, this one may be, this is up, since this is modification to real property, it's possible.
possible.
So it went from a no to a maybe?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to close by thanking all the dedicated employees of the Department of Corrections who continue to do an extremely difficult job very well. Their efforts have made the Department of Corrections a benchmark correctional agency widely recognized as the nation's most successful. Despite the challenges of buildings that move and budgets that shrink, we are prepared to carry out the policy decisions of this committee and the legislature without question or hesitation. We recognize that keeping our community safe while holding offenders accountable and decreasing the overall cost of corrections is in everyone's best interest, and we pledge to continue to do so within the policy guidelines we're given, despite the challenges that we face. We look forward to the decisions of this committee and the legislature as a whole, and stand ready to provide any additional information you might need to guide you in that decision. Mr. Chairman, that concludes our presentation, and we would stand for any other questions. Thank you for your time.
Okay, any questions? Well, Director, I think after about 9 hours, we're going to let you go. And we thank you for your time and appreciate you and all your department's service. And thank you for the good information. Don't anticipate a call back. Unless we have a few things, we'll get a hold of you. Okay, thank you. I think what we'd have to take a break anyway, Sean, and I think we're at this point. We might as well just take a lunch break. And let's come back here at 12:30 and start again and then kind of combine both breaks. It's here, I think. Yeah.